Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Former FBI Director James Comey is at this moment being questioned by senators on Capitol Hill. In a written statement released yesterday, James Comey detailed his discomfort with private meetings between the President of the United States and himself. In his opening remarks in the hearing today, Comey said he was unclear as to why he was fired and concerned about the aftermath.
The administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple.
We're joined now by NPR's Greg Myrie, who has been following these hearings. Thanks so much for being here, Greg.
Sure, Rachel.
So James Comey released this big statement last night, and it detailed tiny details about the meetings, one-on-one meetings that he had with President Trump. And it's really this one bit that is getting a whole lot of attention. I will read this because senators are seizing on this morning. This is what it says. This is James Comey quoting the president. "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go." Again, that's James Comey saying that that's what President Trump told him, obviously Flynn being the former national security advisor. This is the most controversial part. I mean, the central question in this hearing really is the idea of obstruction of justice, right? And what that meant.
Right, right. And again, just to add a little bit of context there, this was at an Oval Office meeting on February 14th. Flynn had been pushed out of his job the day earlier, February 13th, had been in his position less than a month. There was a counterterrorism briefing taking place in the Oval Office. And as it ends, the other senior officials leave, but Trump asked Comey to stay. And Comey says, "My feeling was that I think something pretty big is going to happen here." So his antenna was up. And then this is what Trump laid on him of saying, you know, Comey's a good guy. Or sorry, Flynn is a good guy. Mm-hmm. Can you let it go?
So what are we learning? What have we learned yet? I mean, questioning has just gotten started. But have we learned anything new about why James Comey was fired or anything related to the overall Russia investigation?
What we're getting is a lot of detailed questioning directly related to Comey's statement that came out yesterday. Again, a lot of the focus on the Flynn thing and trying to get more context and background here. I think one of the interesting things Comey has brought up is he says he thinks he was fired because of the Russia investigation. At first, that was left him very confused. He didn't get any real indication. He knew his relationship with the president was awkward, but the president had been saying I want you to keep this job. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, he's fired. Comey didn't know why, didn't understand. And he says, I take the president at his word. He said afterwards, I was fired because of the Russia investigation that relieved a lot of pressure.
A lot of the questioning is, as you say, being based on the statement that was released last night, which is in turn based on contemporaneous notes that James Comey took after these meetings. Did he explain why he was compelled to take those notes?
Yeah, it seems very clear. It was because because of the strange nature of this relationship. Comey was FBI director for 3 years under President Obama. He says they only had two meetings and neither was of any real consequence. And he had these nine separate contacts in about 4 months with Trump, three one-on-one meetings, six phone calls. And not only were they were awkward and uncomfortable, but the president just didn't seem to respect this traditional established boundary between the president and the independence of the FBI and its director, and that there shouldn't be this, you know, you're on my team, you need to help me out here, you need to put out a public statement. Yeah. What can you do about this investigation?
He actually got even more specific today. He said he was concerned, James Comey said he was concerned that the president might, quote, lie about the nature of our meeting. So he was compelled to take these notes. You know, to some degree, this is one man's word against another man's word. We heard James Comey today talk about the President Trump had tweeted at one point, oh, better watch out, James Comey, there might be tapes. And James Comey responded to that today. Do we have that clip we can play? We don't have that clip. Essentially, he said, Lordy, I hope there are tapes, because this is a credibility question at this point.
Absolutely. It's one-on-one. And this is why Comey says he was taking notes immediately after he walked out of his meetings. In fact, his very first meeting back in January was at Trump Tower in New York, came out of Trump Tower, started taking the notes. He shared some of these with senior FBI officials, but they didn't share it more widely. He said he didn't want to infect the investigation team.
Also interesting, Dianne Feinstein pressed Comey on why, if he was so concerned in the moment, he didn't just stand up and say, President, this is wrong. Mr. President, we shouldn't be discussing this. And he said he didn't know why he didn't speak up in the moment, and that if he had been a stronger person, perhaps he would have done otherwise. NPR's Greg Myrie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want a party that makes me feel like I am flying through the air without this ugly weight holding me down, you know?
I was at the, you ever heard of the Laughing Skull in Atlanta?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So I did that little shit fucking room.
Is that Steve, what's his name?
Yes,
yeah,
Steve
whatever.
Hofstetter's
thing.
No, not Steve Hofstetter. That's, this is in Atlanta.
All right, never mind.
Not you were thinking of Laughing Devil. Yeah,
anyway.
Laughing Devil. This is Laughing, yeah, Hofstetter's actually, he's cool. He's, that's
yeah.
My man. This guy, I forgot his name, is Marvin, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
So I'm doing, I had to run through my hour special like
sure.
4 years ago. So my major's like, you got to run through your shit in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
It's because they have a recorder thing. And I hated it because I hate running through my shit.
Right.
Because it's so robotic.
Right.
So one of the shows, you know who James Adomian is?
Yeah, yeah.
James is gay dude, white dude, whatever. Then I had another
guy
hosted. Very funny.
Yeah, does impressions.
Does a dope-ass Louis Black.
He does amazing impressions. Yeah, James is great.
The host was a Asian guy who was an ex-Marine. He was an ex.
So you're really trying to show Georgia what it is.
So no,
black
but,
headliner,
but
gay host.
But I always
Asian
like
guy.
It when it's mixed on my
sure,
show.
Sure, yeah, it's fun.
Or if you're black, your style is just different than mine.
Sure, yeah.
So I, you know, one of the shows, the MC comes back saying, "Man, these people out here are racist as fuck. They're saying like Asian shit." Da da da. I go, "Do they know you're a Marine and you can pretty much snipe all these fuckers? Did you tell them that?" And he goes, "I didn't want to." I said, "Whatever." James Adomian goes out there. James comes back and he's like, "They're calling me faggot." I was like, "Wow, that's crazy, man."
That's
I mean, it was
shit.
Like on some 1930s fucking
wow.
Georgia bullshit. And so I went out there.
Or Boston of today, apparently.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you heard about that.
Shit.
So we're talking, boom. I come out, and dudes like, it was like one of those employee parties, so those are the worst.
Those are the worst,
went out
yeah.
the
because
room.
They know each other.
Right, ugh. And those are the funny dudes of the fucking company.
Right,
so
and they've been drinking, because whatever the employee thing, it didn't start at nighttime
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly.
So they've been
right,
drinking
right.
all day.
All day.
So he starts saying something to me, not nothing malicious, but he was tackling me. So I heckled him back, but I was talking about it. He had a fucked up shirt on.
Right, basic stuff, you know, basic.
Then he started talking about fried chicken shit, and I go, really? I was like this, really? Fried chicken,
right.
Which white people eat more than black people, because
right.
you are more in America, but you wouldn't know the statistics because you're some backward hillbilly motherfucker. So that's what I said. And everyone's like, oh, and this one girl goes, go back to Africa. I said, really? Did your father teach you that, cunt? I said, you cunty-ass bitch. Did your father teach you that? Oh, that was, man, update your racism, guys. You guys have third grade reading level.
So
I'm going in.
Right.
And I was like, it's like, I said, is it really like that? Well, fuck it, let's go. And another motherfucker says something. And then I went off on him. And I said, fuck you and your girlfriend. Fuck, I was just going off. So then this dude at the front was looking at me crazy like he was going to rush the stage. So I picked up the mic stand and, you know, the metal end. So I said, I'm going to let you know something. You're going to be in a coma if you rush me. I can tell you both staff. Bang, I'm going to bang you out. I'm going to fuck you up. I'm going to put you in a hospital. Like, sure. I might get fucked up.
But somebody's going with me.
At least three dudes are getting fucked up. I already know where I'm going to hit you.
We're gonna be
I already know where I'm going to hit you.
Right.
So we're going to be sharing that hospital.
I had the mic and the mic stand. Like, I'm telling you, I'm golfing you. I played baseball. I'm hitting home runs, and I'm knocking you the fuck out.
Right.
And so I kept telling jokes in between. Ass motherfuckers is talking shit. People were leaving. One girl, the girl is talking shit to me, crying, bitch, beat it. Beat it. I'll fucking knock you. I'll knock everybody out.
There is no sympathy from Godfrey when he gets mad at all.
And then these people from Amsterdam, like, yo, God, we love you in Amsterdam. Because I used to do it in Amsterdam all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
We got your back. I said, bet. I said, but they don't know where Amsterdam is. They're right. Fucking Amsterdam. They don't know where the fuck it is. They think it's a street out here. Yo, so, man, it was half the place emptied out. I finished my set. I didn't leave.
Because you're a professional.
At the end, the DJ, this white dude that I was talking with, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about hip-hop, blah, 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 you know, dude, talking about soul music, which a lot of whites like to connect with you. So we're talking about that shit. But then he goes and blames me for the situation. This same dude backstage goes,
DJ.
You know what? You could have, I go, you know what you could do? Get the fuck out of my face. I'm going to kick you in the stomach. I'm going to kick you in your fucking stomach. I said,
you know what's great about
that? Your ass back to the goddamn booth. I'm telling you. I said, I'm not in the mood for this shit. Fuck Atlanta. Fuck this back. That's what I said. Atlanta's dope. Atlanta is dope.
It's just that one moment.
I was like, I'm not in the mood, dude. Get the fuck out of here. Oh, yeah. And then after the show.
Well, that's usually the fuck out of here when I usually know it's going down when Godfrey gives fuck out of here.
Fuck out of here.
It's on and popping.
And the waiters in the back, it was a brother from Brooklyn who moved to Atlanta. They were like, you're the first person. Because a lot of times they get those kind
of
crowds.
And they just
said, you're the first person that stood. You're the first. You're the first person that stood up for themselves, man. And you really shut that shit down. There was a Mexican lady that was with that group that opened her mouth. And I said, listen. And if Mexicans are listening, don't take this personal.
This got nothing to do with it. It's about
you're
the
Mexican. I said, you don't even count in this argument.
All right.
You're Mexican. No one's thinking about you right now. So you need to keep your motherfucking mouth shut. I said, comprende? I said, cállate la boca, cabrón. Por favor.
Context of white supremacy. I hope no one was disturbed or had any unnecessary problems with the language, but it was directly related to workplace racism. Again, context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, June 15th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly segment, workplace racism, especially if you are what they call self-employed, if you're an entrepreneur, you should be one of the first people to dial in. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Again, certainly if you are what they call self-employed, black entrepreneur, dial in for the rest of the victims of racism, non-white people, black people in particular. Dial in if you have figured out some things that work well on the job to minimize problems. I'm going to pause and ring in Stacy so that I do not get in trouble for forgetting. I figure pretty much any black person in the world, if you're willing to stay awake until 1 a.m. to participate in a broadcast on workplace racism, I will do my part to make sure that you can join us. So I will add Stacy and pick up where I left off at. Okay, she should be adding. So I will pick up. For the rest of us, if you victim of racism anywhere in the world, particularly black people, if you have figured out some things that work well to minimize conflict with other non-white people, other white people, if you have figured out some things to help you just keep your job, you get all your raises, promotions, cool office transfer when you need it. And, you know, you just get to put your feet up, do your work, and chill out for the next 20, 25 years, however long you want to hang out there. If you have figured out how to do that, man, write down specific notes and dial in immediately, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-POUND. If you have problems, difficulties, just a situation that you're having some trouble with and you would like suggestions from folks, get some of their counter-racist perspectives. Again, 641-715-3640. You can always use the email untiljustice@gmail.com. I check it regularly throughout the broadcast, untiljustice@gmail.com. And I can keep it anonymous. You know, you don't want to share any identifying information. I know some people have those type of concerns. Again, this is not a broadcast for spectators. This is not something where you tune in every Thursday and, oh, this is going to be my entertainment. Let's hear what difficulties the Negroes are having on the job. No, that's not what this is for. Any non-white person on the planet, even Oprah Winfrey, Barack Obama, they got issues with workplace racism. So if you are even in their position, making their kind of dollars, whatever that means, and you still are having problems with racist man, racist woman, and racist child while you try to get your work done, certainly we can all share, review, share things that have worked out, share problems, and you can share reflections looking back on your work history, just looking at some things where you may have had some difficulty, where you did not recognize it as racism at the time, and or where you can just, hey, Mr. Fuller says all the time, history is best qualified to educate. We can look back, man, this is what I did, this is what I didn't do, this is what I should have did. I should have read my policy and procedure, and that would have saved me a lot of trouble. That is very helpful for a lot of victims of racism, particularly younger folks who don't have an extensive work history. That said, just a quick bit of background on the second audio clip. I thought the first one with James Comey, self-explanatory. Somebody here has been saying regularly about the importance of a workplace journal and taking notes. You don't have to spend a whole lot of time. You can just take 5 minutes and just jot down things that are important. Your memory sometimes is not as good as we would like it to be. And sometimes, months down the road, those notes could become critical evidence in a hearing because it could provide specific time-stamped details about things that happened, things that were said. Workplace journal, great idea. And I would be remiss, man, the word context came up in there. I've said regularly that the title of this broadcast was not picked randomly. I think about once a week on this program, you hear a news segment where someone mentions the word context. Very, very important. Also, former FBI Director Comey, he said that he had his antenna up as victims of white supremacy. Unfortunately, you're going to have to always have your antenna up in the workplace, really around white people, period, but especially in the workplace, even if you're self-employed. Specifics, say that again with the notes, and suspicion. Mr. Comey had reason to suspect that President Trump might not be honest with him. If you are a non-white person, you have every reason to suspect that any and every white person will try to deceive you in some way, shape, form. You already have to have that mind. I've said consistently that white people, they tend to have much greater suspicion of other white people than non-white people. Making a statement could be wrong. That second clip. Now, man, oh man, the lovely Erica Harden sent that to Gus T. Renegade. She is the creator of the web series, the phenomenal web series, Cake, on YouTube. You can check it out. All about racism, white supremacy. She not only did she direct, create it, she stars in the project all about racism, white supremacy. But she found that second segment and she said, this is workplace racism. There is some explicit language, but this is workplace racism. For one, we have had a number of black people on the program whose trade is comedy. W. Kamau Bell, the legend. W. Kamau Bell was on the broadcast. Mr. Ken Steele has participated, even the legendary Dick Gregory, two-time guest on the program. So that is workplace racism. Being a black comic and you might have to deal with a white audience. I know we talked about that specifically with W. Kamau Bell. Also, I believe the victim in the clip said that this was some sort of office party that was going on. So a lot of these people knew each other. This was a big group. Man, that Erica Harden is so slick. Woo! That's almost a double whammy. I have talked for years, those office parties, oh man, you talk about antenna. If you can avoid them, this is why I say, hey, if you can get out of this, nothing. I've never heard anyone in all the, as a matter of fact, today, if you got this experience, make sure you are the first person to dial in. Gus T, shut up. I went to an office party and I got a raise or I got a promotion or I figured out some great information that was helpful to me. I got free tickets to the bowling alley. Anything helpful or constructive happened at the office party. I've never heard that for a black person. I've heard a lot of things similar to what happened in that clip where some white people got real tacky and trashy and said something rude or racist or all of the above or even worse. I've heard a lot of that down through the years. I have never heard somebody say, man, that was the best experience ever. I got a raise. They gave me a new corner office. I'm going to get a new chair. And they taught me how to, you know, pay my mortgage in half the time. I've never heard that. If we have such a person on this line, call in immediately, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943, pound. And again, the most lethal combination in the known universe, alcohol, whites. That comes up on the job a lot. It is amazing how frequently that comes up on the job. People that wrote in. First note. Oh, this is a link. I will have to juggle this for the weekend. This is an actual link to a different story. All right. Next clip. Next person wrote in. I follow my local news story weekly, and this racist one came up on Monday. A Las Vegas enforcement officer suspended a young black employee, refused to serve him when it was later revealed he was in physical pain, and shut down, causing him to put his hands on the counter, not interact. It was his fifth day on the job at Cafe Rio, where officers get a 50% discount to eat. He went home and told his wife, and she caused a viral social media claim the young black employee didn't serve him because he was in uniform, causing a news story and social media comment free-for-all, where in the second story, the news reporter, who is a white woman, admits on video the comments were racist. In the end, the kid was innocent and got paid leave while it was being investigated, while the white wife of the enforcement officer attempted to cause a hoopla uproar after not being there and spreading rumors. I admit I'm not good with video edits other than YouTube, but if you can use the broadcast. Oh, okay. So they do have video of this incident. If they have the whole thing as it plays out, where you get to see the entire story and there is actual news footage of this, wow, that would be great. I'll have to check out the video if that can be downloaded and pasted together. I know I have a meager amount of video editing skills, and I know some of our listeners have even just splendid video techniques and editing abilities. I'm sure someone might make this a counter-racist project if you want to just make it like a YouTube video or something, right, and post it or put it on Facebook or what have you. But yeah, it looks like there are two links. So if they give the full story from beginning to end about this lie and the white woman trying to instigate something that turned out not to be true to get this black employee fired, absolutely. We'll see if we can post it. I'll read one more and then we'll get to the calls. Okay, this is black male. Quick update. It was one of the hottest days we had so far this Monday. And the racist suspect that I have mentioned before, that was around 60 years of age, asked me, do I know what the symptoms of a heat stroke are? In which I replied, yes, and why? He then said, who is the fairest out here? Wow. So I asked, what do you mean by fair? Great question. He replied, who has the whitest skin? In which I said, compare to me, all the men out here have white skin. He then informed me that a coworker was Irish and he had the fairest skin. I then asked him, why did you say he is Irish when he clearly appears to be white and doesn't speak with an Irish accent? He said that he has ginger hair, whatever that means. And that feature is recessive to the blonde black hair and the Irish fight amongst themselves, fighting Irish. I then asked him again, why do you say that he's Irish and has the fairest white skin, and when and why did the Irish people become classified as white? His response was, I see where you're going with this, and he turned and left. So far, so good. It has been 2 days, and he has not spoken as much to me. So after a couple days, he finally speaks to me and informs me that he is retiring. So I decided to ask him for a compensatory request that upon his departure, can he put in a good word in for me to the owners of the company, because about 2 weeks before he had given me a book about finance. But when he gave me the book to read, he gave it to me on the busiest day so that I would have no time to actually review it, and he wanted it back by the end of the day. I suspect that was an act of racism. I do too. I also suspect that I will not be getting my compensatory request because his response was just buckets and buckets of words. I guess if I was going to add any commentary, if I was going to make that sort of request, if I knew this is a person that I might want, this sounds like something people often call or refer to as a letter of recommendation, I might not ask those questions until I got my letter of recommendation. Then I would have been like, do you remember a couple weeks ago when you said such and such? Any of those questions that might seem like this is getting at asking about, you know, what it means to be white, anything might seem like I'm getting around to what it means, racism, what racism means, what does it mean to be white? Anything close to that, I might steer away from that. I can see, I have concluded white people, they're not ignorant about racism. They very quickly can process. It seems like that's what he basically admitted here. When you asked him, you know, when did Irish people become classified as white? When and why? And he can see that if you understand racism, white supremacy, which every white person does, when they hear a question like that, they already know what they're going to have to explain. I'm going to have to end up giving up a lot of details about what it means to be white, which could indict myself and everybody else here who is fair skinned, quote unquote. I'm not. Matter of fact, in fact, I'm retired. and might see if I can get you fired so that you and me can leave at the same time. That sort of thing. But we'll have to see. Great job of asking questions. Again, I'm always a huge, huge advocate. Ask questions. If you can ask questions, generally things will be good. Ask questions. And sometimes you don't even need to respond. Sometimes you can. One of my favorite codified responses. With that, I have other emails. We'll get those down the road. If you dialed in with commentary on what you've heard thus far, if you have your own situation you would like to share, lines should be open. Feel free to chime in. Took me a while to get some of the hands. Sorry about that. All right, folks who dialed in with the hand up line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I apologize about the noise. I'm walking. This is Red from Ohio. I just had one quick story to share. I know that on the show we talk a lot about, or lots of people talk a lot about just asking questions, which is something that I have been trying to do more often. And, of course, my new supervisor, suspected racist, he is with a non-white person, I'm assuming by his own admission. Well, he actually came up with a solution for someone asking questions. I asked him a question about something that I was working on, and there wasn't any procedures for it. And he had said, well, you're the one who was working on it, so I'm going to challenge you to figure it out. And he proceeded to ask me questions about what should be done with the item that I was working on. So I just thought that that was very interesting. And when I was speaking to my mother about it, because I speak to her a lot about, you know, different work stuff, and she was like, well, you know, that's just a way of him basically saying that he didn't have the answer, which, of course, I knew, but I didn't want it to be just on me, because sometimes I do have to deal with financial adjustments. And so I much rather, since it's not my money, I much rather have the go-ahead from a white person in charge and actually have that proof. So I just thought that that was interesting. And the only remedy that I could get was I just asked a white female or a white woman who also kind of handles the same thing as that I do. And I don't know if this was the right answer, but I also keep track of all the conversations that I have with different people in my area. And just to make sure that I can go back and say, well, this person suggested this since there weren't any procedures on it. That's all I have to share for right now. Thank you for listening.
Interesting. That right there is interesting as well, where they will kind of toss a black person. I think one of their phrases, they'll kind of toss you to the woods where something that they haven't figured out or some problem where they don't know what to do with it says, oh, we'll just give it to nigger and let her, you know, deal with it. Have you like, I think that happens to a lot of black people with difficult, challenging assignments that, you know, they just don't want. They even have that is in the dictionary. Niggling. We've just went over that before. They have niggling assignments they will give out to black people on the job. But that is great. You said just kind of keeping track, documenting the dialogue exchanges that you've had. Great. Something I think a lot of folks have recommended, especially when you can do so via email, because you're keeping almost automatically generating electronic record of what has been said, if questions get answered, that sort of thing. Excellent, excellent. But yeah, that's pretty standard with that sort of treatment on the job. Other folks who dialed in, if you either have questions, if you have suggestions based on what you've heard from folks who dialed in, I think Stacy from London is with us as well, chiming in 1:30 a.m. Friday morning. Other folks who are with us, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Hi, Gus.
Greetings, Stacy in London.
Hi, and hello to the rest of the callers. Gus, I do have a few things, but I'll come back in a short while.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you.
Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free. Again, we are having spectators, especially spectators who do have a hand up, and then just spectators in general hanging out. This is not the broadcast for spectators, although I can read an email if folks are needing some time to get comfortable. One of the folks who wrote in for workplace racism shared, so this person wrote in previously, I apologize for not adding more context to comments from last week. As the summer approaches and things slow down, I think I will have time to call in. Prior to this happening, there's been some incidents of racism during athletic competition in the district. So this was the person who dialed in last week who also coaches, not retired firefighter, but who works with young black student athletes, and they went against a different team with white players, and one of the little race soldiers, racist child, one of these little racist white children said something racist to one of the black student athletes, and he used his counter-racist code to get this little racist hooligan sent home. He didn't get to participate. And I think I had some questions just about how all this came about. Anyway, he says he'll have more time to call in. Prior to this situation happening that I just kind of gave a short summary, there has been some incidents of racism during the athletic competition in the district. This year at a playoff basketball game against an all-white school, the white crowd was calling our crowd animals and niggers. The only thing that was done was to make sure that the away team, which was an all-white team, had security escort them to the bus. Our students were removed from the gym immediately after the game. As far as things with my team, usually I don't discuss racism too much, but I found it necessary when we went to our first meet this year. One student asked the opposing white team what the name of their school was. He responded aggressively, "Can't you read?" The following meet, when we stepped out of the bus into an all-white school, the white athletes were whispering, "Look, they're all black." After these incidents, I knew I had to talk to the team about racism and how to deal with it at meets. I told them that when we compete, that it is business and not personal, so we should not be trying to make friends or say or do anything that we don't have to say or do. I told them to be courteous and polite because being a non-white team, the expectation is for us to be out of control and act like animals. We are not animals. We are intelligent, and we should act like that. I mentioned some of the prior incidents of racism during competition in the district and told students not to be surprised if they are called a nigger or a spick. These are words that I have heard before during the competition. I told them, instead of getting angry, come and speak to me immediately, and I will handle it from there to the best of my abilities. I already thought about how I would deal with these types of incidents as well, so that's how I was able to make a quick decision after the students told me what the white student had said. I do not want my students to feel like I didn't back them on something that can be catastrophic to their self-esteem and self-respect. Students never forget something like that, and I wouldn't be able to look myself in the mirror had I dealt with it any differently. Great insight. This does get to some of the questions that I asked last week. And this, I say this regularly with workplace racism. We really, all of us, Gus T included, cannot be surprised about racism. That's something Mr. Fuller emphasizes with codification. It's United Independent. We certainly don't all have the same perspective, are not going to have the same perspective. But I do think a crucial aspect of all of our approaches to this problem, we cannot be surprised about white people being racist. Not anymore. We got to expect that. That's what I mean about what does it mean to be white. Once I think that will help us be much more efficient in going about solving this particular problem in terms of how do you deal, how do I adjust my behavior to deal with individuals classified as white, particularly in workplace situations. The person that just wrote in, this black male, said he was able to make a quicker decision with this because I already am not surprised. And then the people that I'm working with, even though these are in a environment with children, I am also teaching them to not be surprised about racism. I'm already telling them, I'm already giving them a code about what I want them to do. And then I'm already thinking about incidents that could happen. I'm looking at things that have happened before, things that could happen, how we respond. That's what all of us can do on our job situations. What are the types of things that can happen? And then what do I think would be the best way to handle it? That's why I said I think it's important all of us reflecting on our workplace situation, because we get to hear more types of situations that potentially could happen and think, you know, compare it to other things that have happened. You can figure out solutions, steps, things that you want to do. When you go into the work environment not thinking, I'm going to be under attack. There are people, their entire job is going to see me fail, to come in and try and ruin my day, mess things up so that I don't get my promotions and what have you. That if you go in as a black person and you're not thinking that anywhere in the world, you are going to be set up for tremendous frustration, disappointment, and surprise we can eliminate the surprise with whites. Folks who dialed in, if you have, appreciate the fellow for writing in. Thank you, sir, for the detail. Other folks, if you are on the line, if you have commentary, questions, suggestions, lines should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. This is Mohandasi. I wanted to speak about my experience doing research on albino rats. When I was 13 years old, I was working with the head of a physiology department at the particular university that I was at. And what we were doing was we would take these albino rats and we would, we were studying diabetes, and we were also studying diabetes. The next year we were studying some type of heart ailment and trying to figure out a particular chemical compound that other people weren't able to find. We weren't able to find it, but we were trying to find a particular chemical compound in the aorta. And then another year I was dealing with cancer, and that was with Birch, though. But it relates to workplace racism, and because this was my job, and every day I would have to go in the rats, and I every day I would have to go in and I would have to kill this creature. I would have to kill a rat, and I, in order to try to solve the problem of white people having type 1 diabetes. And so what we would do is, we would go in, or I'd go in, and I would have to inject the rat with a sedative. Then I had to make an incision above the, right above the pelvis, cut up through the abdomen, through the chest cavity. Then I'd have to destroy the diaphragm so the creature would die quickly, and not have to, I mean, it suffered plenty, but so it wouldn't have to suffer much longer. And then we would remove certain organs of interest, and we would hook up these organs to a machine. And then we would put selective chemicals in the IV of this machine. The organs were still living, and then measure the results. We would wrap up the dead carcass of the albino rat, and we would put it in a freezer that was full of other dead carcasses of albino rats. In order to study the diabetes, we had to induce them with diabetes. That was a step before us. So we got it by the time it had diabetes. But the point I'm wanting to make is they also had to induce albinism, because this isn't something you don't get a buildup of albinism just regularly. Yes, it happens. Albinism happens. But to get a big population of albino creatures, you have to intentionally create albinos. You have to make a colony of albinos. Well, anyway, it hurt me every time I go in, every time I had to take the life of this creature. I didn't take any pleasure in that. It was very unpleasant to kill this creature, but it was very fascinating what I was doing. I don't even take pleasure in killing the little creatures that are in my house. I try to take them out of my house. You know, I don't take pleasure in ending life. So that's one thing. But I just wanted to point, well, the reason that we were doing that, the reason we were studying these albino rats and taking out their organs and trying to study these diseases, was so that we can make sure that the white people, the albinos,
this would fit better on the compensatory call-in. This is, I'm not really seeing how this relates as much to workplace racism. If you want to share this for the compensatory call-in, grand, Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other folks who dialed in who have content related to workplace racism, feel free. Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I was listening to the report of the other coach, and I will just say to everybody who may not know that, especially if you are a coach where most if not all of your players are non-white black athletes, that you're going to spend a lot of time talking about racism and white supremacy, because white people, the coaches as well as the players, and I don't care what age, I don't care if they're 5 year old, what we call bobbleheads, to the NFL, they are going to be saying and doing things that are considered to be their racist antics and or behavior. Now, one thing about the communication about racism to, you know, basically to prepare them psychologically and mentally for what they're going to be up against. What my experiences, and my experiences are pretty long, I think 1981 was what, some like 36 years ago? That's when I started coaching. Is that the non-white athletes do well, very well under those circumstances, for the most part, in athletic events, whether it's individual situations and or team situations. We can mention people like Muhammad Ali, the 1968 Olympic team, especially with the black males and black females who was on that team in 1968. There was the most world records ever in the history of Olympics was broken based on what everybody famously know about the Tommy Smith and John Carlos anti-racist gesture, and so on and so forth. You know, I've had plenty of experiences with that. It's not like you necessarily look forward to it, but nevertheless, it is something that you do talk to them about. And I would say, from all my experiences, the young people, they get it. They really get it in other words, they're like shaking their heads, coach, I definitely understand what you're talking about. And I know sometimes they would bring it up. They would bring it up themselves. I can recall when we won a national title back in 2007, 2008, the significant game was this team in Dallas, Texas, South Lake, that hadn't lost a game in about 4 or 5 years. And they were very tacky, but they underestimated, didn't realize that that our young people had picked up what was in these magazines that they had in the hotel room, as well as the little racist antics, like taking apart the our inflatable tunnel that we run through, that sort of thing. You know, all of these little tactics that they're utilizing, it actually fired our athletes up as opposed to depressing them, because they're used to playing in front of crowds down here in South Florida. They were used to it. And so I can really identify on what that gentleman was talking about, and just keep on doing what he's doing, because it sounds, and we have never met, so it sounds like we have a lot in common, is what I'm saying. And so keep doing what you're doing. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Yep, reminded me of retired firefighter, other folks out there working with
young black people using athletics as a means to get them some constructive information and even a few tidbits about racism, white supremacy, counter-racism at a young age. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, everybody. This is The Voice. Gus, I have my hand up, but I'm not in a good area, so that's why I haven't talked yet. I'm heading home, but when I get there, I'll just, double back. But I do want to say definite self-respect to the Golden State Warriors for not going to visit President Trump. When you win at your job, working hard, and the big boss, racist big boss, wants you to come visit him, and you say, nope. That's okay. So I just want to leave you there and chime back in later.
Yes. Right on. If other folks have commentary, feel free. Line should be open. Folks spectating today, or I guess we have, the caller said he's waiting to get into a better area, and then we do have some spectators apparently, but feel free to chime in if you think of workplace racism experiences. I guess I will get in if things are going that well for the folks who are spectating, but you are not having any experiences, any problems, and you're not seeing anything, nobody is doing anything untoward in your work environment that is even, worthy of commentary. Phenomenal. You are in an envious position. I hope it lasts for a long time on your job. And hopefully you're being compensated well. You're getting all your raises so you can invest in the cows. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. Hit the blog racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. PayPal is in the top right corner. If you are not into PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have invested, supported 8+ years. But certainly for the folks, if you are in that glorious position where you can spectate and no issues on the job, man, invest. Grand. Other folks who are with us, if you have either suggestions also on any of the commentary that's been shared thus far, feel free. And I'm still looking for folks who have tried to get a raise. I'm throwing that out forever, who have, come up with a code. This seems to work well to get increased compensation on a job. I think we've only had a couple folks. It's been pretty low, though. So if we have people who've done that, always looking for that as well.
I got
Stacey in London.
Hi. Apologies, because I didn't get to hear the clip, so I can't comment. I've got a couple of things I wanted to say before I do. I just wanted to give my respect to the retired firefighter, because I saw on your Facebook account, I believe the link to the fire that's taken place in the UK in a tower block, and there are lots of people who've clearly lost their lives. But just waking up yesterday morning to see that and just witnessing just obviously the horror that those families have gone through, but also I do have a lot of respect for anyone who puts their life at risk to help others, and the scenario that we've witnessed over here is truly horrendous. So just to give my respect to the firefighter for being in that career, and all the hard work and just the bravery that entails. I wanted to just in terms of one of the issues I wanted to cover. This is something that happened to me quite a while ago, but I guess it's just a cautionary tale, really, for people who sometimes, people will approach you and appear to be offering you kindness in the workplace, but be very, very careful. So this This is back in 2003, and my mother, she passed away. She wasn't, as far as we were aware, she was fine. And within the space of 5 weeks, she was ill, diagnosed with an illness, dying and buried. And you can, hopefully people can appreciate that, you know, with that situation, completely shell-shocked. And at the time, the organisation that I worked for, I don't really remember telling them anything about my need for childcare or anything, because it was never ever an issue. So, because my mother used to pick my daughter up from school, or my daughter used to go to my parents' home after school, so I never really struggled with anything around childcare or anything. At the time, I think my daughter was about 12, and I remember one of my directors called me into a meeting. And I'd taken time off work. I had 2 weeks off, and then I came back into work, and he called me into the office, and he said to me, you know, really sorry to hear about your mother. You know, if there's anything you need in terms of child, you know, support to look after your child, and a bit more flexibility in terms of your work schedule, just let us know. And I thought, okay, that's very nice, very caring. And then he ended that conversation by saying, you know, just put something in writing to me. Come back with a proposal. And as I said, I was absolutely shell-shocked because of everything that had gone on with my mother. But something just didn't seem right about that offer. So I didn't say anything. Give it some thought and come back to him. And something just told me, whatever I do, do not tell this man about any problems, successes, joys, failures, whatever, related to my childcare requirements and how that might impact on my day job. So I ignored it. And I did have to make adjustments, but, you know, whatever my situation was, I wasn't going to make them aware of it. There was another black female who worked in the organisation, and she had always had problems with childcare, and sometimes she used to bring her children into the office because we used to do evenings as well, because we used to do a lot of community work, so sometimes you'd have to be running community meetings and stuff like that. So, you know, the few times she had to bring her child into work, or she'd have problems with childcare. So I found out that he'd also suggested something very similar to her. And so she put in writing that she was having problems with the job and because of her childcare situation, and put something in writing to him. And needless to say, my instincts were correct. They used that as a reason to get rid of her out of her job. And so I... you know, obviously my instincts were right, and so it's just a cautionary tale. Usually if someone's making an offer, it probably isn't. Take time, don't rush into anything. And it also just highlights the sheer wickedness that will be practiced against us in the workplace. And Gus, I'll mute my line and I'll come back. I've got a couple of other updates, but I'll come back later.
Wow. That's the insidiousness of that is the system of white supremacy. One of the really awful things that it does is it discourages black people in particular, but I think all non-white people, it discourages a lot of us from asking for help. I know I've spoken with Mr. Fuller about this regularly. You get some people so beaten down and they ask for anything, you know, a toothpick, a teaspoon of water, and, you know, they're beaten, or in this case, help is offered. You ask for the help, and it's, oh my gosh, ask for help. We got to fire niggers in here asking for all these resources, and you know, this is just not going to be worth our time. We can get somebody else to come in here who doesn't have all these problems and baggage they're going to drag into the office every day. That's the kind of environment that you have under the system of white supremacy, where you end up with a lot of non-white people who do not ask for help, which is, you know, horrendous to beat people into that state and to terrorize people to where they are afraid to ask for help. Other folks who dialed in who have commentary, like to share, feel free. Line should be open.
Yes, may we heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I had already spoken, but I just wanted to, if no one else is going to speak, I just wanted to basically share my story, very similar to what Stacey in the UK just shared. If that's all right?
Oh, for sure.
Well, I actually had a situation where I, like you were saying, you know, I was afraid to ask for help, because I had a family emergency. There was a death in the family, and what I was wanting to do was just change my schedule so that way I would just work a different day and then still attend the funeral. Well, it actually worked out in my favor because I had, when I didn't make a big deal out of trying to go to the funeral or trying to miss out on work. And the supervisor at the time, he did go ahead and allow me to take bereavement. Now, that was just only one of the probably the very few times, if the only time that that has actually ever happened. But I was definitely still very cautious, just like how Stacey was, and to not ask and to not just assume, because I had actually heard about another Black female who used to work at the organization, and you'll see who I said used to. She had also had a death in the family. It wasn't like an immediate family member like in my situation, and she had ended up, telling her supervisor. Supervisor was like, you know, we can't give you this time off, despite the fact that, you know, it's because of our displacement. The reason why we, you know, it might not be, you know, your mother might not be there in your life or your father might not be there in your life. How the Black female was explaining to me, she was saying that it was actually a cousin who was very, very close to her, helped raise her. And she went off, took the time, she went ahead and still went to the funeral, and of course, they couldn't wait to fire her. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you for allowing me to share again.
Absolutely. I have heard that before from other Black people where they were not given time off from their job for bereavement. In fact, were threatened with termination if they took, you know, 2 days off. And it's not like we were talking, you know, 6 months leave of absence or 3 months, a month, 2 weeks leave of absence, you know, paid leave or something for grieving. We just, you know, a few days, and it was, oh, no, that's not the policy. I don't care who died. You know, if you're not at that desk Monday morning, then, you know, better start filling out applications elsewhere type deal. I've seen that regularly. So, yeah. And even what makes it so terrible is that so many Black people do experience that, where they either become fearful of asking for help because they think that, or they have experienced being mistreated when they ask for help under the system of white supremacy. And or you become fearful and you don't ask for help when the help is actually there and you could get it. I know a victim of racism was in an employment situation where her job situation, they were able to provide assistance in transitioning. They were able to, I guess, like do some form of advanced compensation and some other perks and what have you to help the person out as they were transitioning in. But this is something where you would have to do some, you know, conversing and sharing about your situation and seeing if they can offer assistance to mediate. And it's the same type of deal. So many non-white people in that sort of situation, it's what? You need an advance or some help before you even start the job. Oh, please, you know, we can fire you and get somebody in here who doesn't, same thing I said before, doesn't have all that baggage. We don't have to go through all that. So many Black people, that's what they get. So it puts you in a really, really just, you know, tough predicament for a lot of non-white people. That's, you know, how you end up having people just being totally traumatized, because for a lot of times the problems and such that we'll have, if it's grieving a death in the family and you need a week off or 2 weeks off or what have you, that's not a big deal. That's not something that should not be granted. But so many times just those type of reasonable requests are met with hostility and, you know, flagrant abuse in the workplace by racists. Other folks who tuned in, who have a hand up, if you have commentary, line should be open. Feel free. Other folks with us or folks just listening in at this point?
God be heard.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Big Vic in Birmingham, Alabama. Presently, I'm in Black River, Wisconsin. Can I share about my, I'm in an NA group and I want to share something about what happened to me in my NA group, or do I have to wait till compensatory calling?
How is your NA group, how is that related to workplace racism?
You work to stay clean.
That seems like a compensatory call-in thing, even though that absolutely is a job. Staying sober certainly can be a tough job for some. That seems like a compensatory call-in thing for the Saturday 9 p.m. broadcast. If you can dial, are you able to dial in Saturday so you can share?
Yeah, I'll do. I'll wait till Saturday. Thanks for letting me share.
For sure, for sure. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, that's open forum. You can, you know, share whatever subject matter comes up. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific, compensatory call-in today. Workplace racism. Workplace racism. Folks have commentary related to the job. 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Other folks have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good evening. Even to the other callers, also VA. A couple different things. Guess I will start with yesterday. We had a quote-unquote, I held a after-work function for different people. I'm in the mortgage business for different agents. I work with, I don't want to say mixed, that's the wrong word, but I work with a lot of non-white and white people. This is the first time that that's happened in a while, but had an after-work mixer. I'm new to the company, so we wanted to do something. I wanted to do something to get people together, drum up some business and, you know, learn people's personalities. Had a good turnout. My snoring manager that I talked about last week actually came out. Yeah, he was very awake when it came to alcohol and chicken wings. So I thought that was an interesting observation. He came down and he assisted in helping with paying for it, which was what I appreciated because he has the resources. I could have done it too, but it's better to use white people's money. And just had a good, it was a decent event, but one of the things that I noticed was that, and I think Gus talks about it frequently, white people and alcohol, listening to one of the gentlemen talk about his previous experience before he got into this business and some of the things that he was doing was really, really tacky and just different experiences and running around town. And it was almost like, man, if that was a black person saying that, they wouldn't even work for the company. But for him, it was just very, very common. White male, but, you know, you just get away with anything in the system of racism and white supremacy. I had another meeting this morning that I held. I'm a quote-unquote vice president of some group. It's just a title. There was a gentleman there, that white gentleman, and his business that he's in, and it relates to workplace racism. I'm not getting too far off. The business he's in is he does hospice care. And he was explaining, you know, what hospice is. And if people aren't familiar with hospice, is that when people get really, really sick and they're beginning to transition, they put them in hospice care, and they take care of them, and they try to create a quote-unquote safe environment for the family while this person transitioned or they died. And on the back of the flyer, it was a welcoming moment. It says hospice is free with people that have terminal illnesses. And my first thought was that, well, racism, white supremacy is a terminal illness, but yet we don't get free medical or free health care. Just what Dr. Welsing said is that Black people are not eligible for mental health. I had another conversation today with a Black female in the workplace. She actually works in child care. And she deals with different races of children. And I thought this was an interesting conversation, so I'm just going to share it. And she was telling me how she was holding this baby that's classified as white. She was telling me how she didn't understand how these little babies, you know, they're so innocent when they're little. And she's like, you know, the baby's adorable and such a nice kid and stuff like that. And you know, all these kids are just wonderful and great. And then she starts talking about, man, you know, we all just kind of had the same thought process about, you know, not recognizing color and prejudices and, you know, the typical response. And so learning to be patient with another victim, I just said, well, do you think that it's Black people's fault the way that racism functions? And she said, no. And so I said, well, who would the next logical culprit be? And she said, well, white people. So I said, you then wouldn't think that it's not the victim's fault that they're being victimized. And she said, I never thought of it like that. And I said, you know, we as non-white people, and this is just listening to this broadcast, always able to share constructive information, have to figure out ways to change our behavior, because as Jess has always stated, Jess has stated, and many other people on the show have stated, there's no evidence that white people are going to change their behavior, whether or not they're 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 or 20. There's no massive movement. There's nothing that's occurred that'll make you say, oh, wow, these people are going to stop practicing racism. And she actually just sat there and said, I never thought like that. And it's always good when you're able to talk with another victim and things just start to make very, very logical sense. So I just wanted to share that, and I appreciate the time. Hopefully I didn't deviate a little bit, but I thought that was important to share. Thanks, Gus.
Wowee, you all are on it with talking to other Black people on the job. That is grand. I do not have the, I guess, courage to have some of these dialogues with other Black people in a workplace environment. If it, you know, we were just on our own time, what have you, that's a different story. But at work, I would have a lot less to say than you all. But that's great. That's Black self-respect right there, in my opinion, in trying to share constructive information with other Black people and just asking questions. That can be super helpful. I remember last week you talking about the white guy manager, no less, who was nodding off and not paying attention. Even, you know, some of your other colleagues are noticing, you know, this uncouth and unprofessional behavior, but him being right as rain and ready to roll with the chicken wings for the festivities. And I agree, it's always best in a workplace environment or anywhere else to use whites' funds. They have way more money, so absolutely, anytime that you can get them to share a few nickels, after all, they have raped and plundered the entire universe. That is, you know, the least that they can do. They've stolen everything, so they can easily fit the bill. But yeah, that's a great job. Just being mindful on the job. I think some other folks have shared regularly for months now about their efforts to share just constructive information and asking questions. I'm a big advocate of that. Just asking questions, especially if it's a non-white person, you all have some sort of rapport, and you can ask questions, and you know they don't have a problem answering. That's great job. Great job. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you wanted to share, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I make additional commentary if nobody else is going to comment?
Feel free, retired firefighter.
First and foremost, I would just like to say thank you to the UK caller. I think she was referring to me. It just gave me an a thought that I would share with everybody. It has something to do with workplace racism, definitely. That's synonymous to the fire that was in London. One thing I quickly learned on that job, and basically, you know, listeners, y'all can figure it out, that in when it comes to places to stay, quote unquote, non-white people are going to be zoned in the worst conditions. Therefore, in that circumstance, if there's going to be some sort of danger or fire, that is going to be non-white people who are going to suffer the most. Elevators not working, different the building itself doesn't come up to code, that sort of thing. The owners really don't care. They make excuses that, well, they tear the place up, you know, that sort of thing, and I don't have time to be coming back every day, all the time, to fix up this and fix up that. And in turn, all it takes is one situation, and you would get the results of what you saw on national television in this part of the world. And I suspect, I could be wrong, but I suspect that most of the victims on that fire were non-white people. I actually saw, they had actually interviewed some people.
Not really workplace in every racism, I mean.
Uh-oh. Well, that's all I was going to say about that. But really, I was going to thank you, ma'am. About young people, suggestion for young people that may be listening. Find out at the earliest that you can, probably you're going to be around teenage years, find out about two or three things that you like to do that you can get compensated for it. Because the sooner you have that in your ideas and plans, the more that you can work towards it. And it would at least minimize, you're going to have problems anyway, you know, with racism, that's for sure. But it would at least would assist to minimizing you having problems in employment when you have the foresight to have planned, you know, and like I said, meeting why I said two or three things, because just so you afford yourself some options. Just making a suggestion as far as someone who is either not very experienced in the workplace and or is still like a teenager or in college, you know, have something that you want to pursue that you can get compensated for. And it really would help out in reducing your issues and problems in employment. That's what I really wanted to say. Thank you.
Great suggestion. The fire aspect, we will be talking about that in depth. Certainly, we can talk about it on Saturday, but we will have just the timing. Our Global Sunday talk on racism is Sunday, so we will certainly be talking about the fire this coming Sunday with a lot of our Black Britons will be here. They've been watching and posting, talking about that. And then Esther Stanford Cosay, she is also a Black female in London. She'll be with us on Monday. We'll be discussing the fire and some of the recent election, some of the other events. We'll see if she, like Stacey, voted for Jeremy Corbyn. But she'll be with us on Monday. So the fire, we should have that covered within the next 2-3 days. No problem. But yeah, great suggestion for young folks in terms of figuring out some things that they enjoy doing and ways that they could be compensated for it. Even athletics, that is a great one, because there are a lot of things that are associated with athletics where you could be compensated in some way, shape, or form if you are doing other things associated with it. Even refereeing, I never even thought about that, getting some of the folks who are interested. Hey, you could be paid to referee some of these games down the road, even thinking about that. Anywho, other folks who dialed in who have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Gus and the callers. This is Ari. I just wanted to share how my codification has improved in the workplace. I've been taking more notes on paper or on my laptop, whatever the situation is. I also always just have a notebook and pen on me, like in my purse or whatever, so I can write down anything I think about, like questions, concerns, or even if I'm confused at that time, maybe I can refer back to my notes and kind of see why I was confused at that moment, or even just advice that I can give to other people, which it leads me to taking better, even smaller mental notes, even though I know we can't remember many things. It just helps make my counter-racist thoughts more clear and more effective. I've also been sharing my codification with my sister. She always calls me with problems to vent about on the job, and I'll try to give her advice by what I practice and how I would go about it. And more times than not, she'll come back and call me saying it helped her out. The most recent one being with the HR lady at her new job. And her previous job she had, she was very uncodified and kind of talking to the white people, talking too much, so she ended up leaving that job. So this her new job with the HR lady, the lady has been messing up her pay on purpose, messing up her timesheet, losing her papers, saying she didn't receive any. So I've been working for about 6 years, and we're in the same industry. So problems with the HR is like, it's nonstop, constant, and I always tell her that they're always going to give you problems. You should just expect that. So I told her right away, I suspect this lady is practicing racism and she's deliberately giving you a hard time. And she agreed. And probably just thinking she's not going to do something or take any action. So I told her if she has to go every day to this lady to view her timesheet or find a way to view it frequently, she needs to do that, especially if this is a job that she plans to have for some time or until a better quote unquote opportunity arrives. Not wait until payday where you notice they messed all your shit up until they messed up your stuff, causing you to be more stressed. So she does keep a journal now, and she reports back to me like the questions she asked them. And for the past couple of weeks, I've been communicating with her about this lady, and it's been seeming to get better. So I just told her, just be adamant talking to this lady, because, like I said, I don't expect it to stop, but always asking questions and them just knowing that you're not going to be that kind of worker that just automatically bows down to them and just says, okay, and lets them mess up all your stuff. So she did report back to me and say the problems didn't stop, but they get on it quicker, and they've made comments like, oh, you're so organized with your notes, or you're a good worker, blah, 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 all that fake stuff. But before this incident, she called me frustrated about it. She was kind of yelling at me over the phone, saying, like, I don't know why you always tell me to minimize contact, minimize conflict with people here at work or wherever I go, or ask them more questions, because I'm always going to be around these white people and I don't want to be stuck at home all day. Because even when I do ask them questions, they're still racist towards me or they still mistreat me. So she was kind of like taking it out on me, which I understand. Everyone deals with their oppression differently. So I told her, look, these are the things that I practice at work and that help me. If it doesn't help you, don't use it. I don't change up the advice I give her because, like I told her, this is what works for me. So she kind of calmed down a little bit, and I know she was just discouraged and stressed at the time because she still communicates with me and will still call me and be like, oh, that was good. Work is still stressful, but not as stressful as her previous job. I'm trying to get her to listen to workplace racism because that has helped me a lot too. Also, the second story I have is a couple weeks ago, I was at the college taking a test, and this was like a proctored exam. So you don't have anything, you go in the room and you take the test on the computer. And so once I was done on the computer, you have to wait to talk to like a counselor, I guess, to get your results, and they kind of talk to you. And so the test I took, you didn't have to have scratch paper, but if you were taking a test, because people take different tests in that room, you get this blank sheet of paper, and it's like a specific color because that's the only paper you're supposed to write on. And then after the test, when you go out, you're supposed to immediately give it to the person that's in charge of like overseeing the people taking the test in the room, I guess. So as I was standing in line, I didn't have a paper, like I said, so I went straight to the line. And this white lady came out behind me and go to the counter and had, and was returning her other things like her pencil or whatever. And so it was a white guy, and he told her like, okay, can I see your scratch paper? Like, I need to take it. And mind you, it says on every single paper, they tell every single student that takes this exam before they go in and after they go out, like, I need your notes. Like, it's written everywhere. Like, you can't take your notes. And this white lady said, oh, no, I'm taking this note. And he goes, no, I'm going to need them. And he's like, because I don't know what you have written on the paper. It could have something to do with the test. And so she kind of lowered her voice. I was trying to ear hustle like I always do, just listen, look. I don't care. I'm really nosy. And so if you don't want anything to be said or heard around me, I suggest you don't say it really loud because I'm listening. And so she kind of lowered her voice, but at the end, she did get to walk away with her paper. She did get to walk away with her notes. So that's why I think it's important to always take notes. And I listened to the call-in on Saturday, and someone was talking about them not being able to like take notes at a job training or something. I think you should always ask questions about that. I wouldn't see why you wouldn't be able to have notes or like a pen and a paper, especially during like a work training or a school training, or even like the example I just gave, the white lady being able to take her notes when it's written everywhere. It's big signs, like, you cannot take your notes. So I just thought that was, I was like, wow. But I already knew right when she was like, oh, I'm taking my notes. I was like, watch this lady take her notes. And so she did take her notes. So even if there's rules and stuff, white people can just bypass them. So it's important for us as non-white people to take notes and just observe what's going on around us. But thanks for listening.
Great. Nobody ear hustles better than racists. That has been my experience. They are extraordinary. That is a great job of just paying attention to having your antenna up. James Comey said the same thing, having his antenna up to see what was going down and the white woman flaunting the rules and doing what she wanted to get her notes out. I do remember that from this past weekend, workplace racism came up. Our caller, she was talking about her job situation and training where they didn't allow notes. And I've seen that sort of thing, whether it comes down to discretion, whether whites, they know the racist code and what language they need to use with other whites, other racists, so that they can smuggle out whatever contraband that they have. But I've seen that, you know, those type of rules broken for years for racists. That is A+. I guess people, it seems like you all, you know, really make an effort to share constructive information with other black people. I know sometimes it can be very difficult, especially if you have a black person who maybe they don't have quite the same view that you have about racism, white supremacy. It can be tough to share information when they're like, I don't like that, you know, minimize contact and staying at home. And I, you know, have encountered that sentiment before. But when you at least have said some things that, you know, make enough sense that the person continues to seek you out, and for something as serious as problems on the job, that is awesome. And just asking questions. I say that consistently. That's one of the best things that you can do in a workplace setting. And at least for me, it always stands out when I hear from people who say, and it doesn't have anything to do with the couch, just however they end up learning about counter-racism. But when they reflect on their own work experience and they say, you know, this is when I was more confused and I was real chatty on the job and, you know, my white friends and we're doing this. And now that they're more codified, that's one of the quickest things that changes, them not being all chatty. And pretty much consistently, I've heard it is a massive improvement in terms of how they're able to function and what happens when they get away from just, you know, I'm an open book and just mouth running, you know, 50 miles a minute, talking to everybody, and to just, hey, let me clamp down on some of that, do some listening, do some working, and pay attention to what's going on, as opposed to, you know, trying to participate in every conversation. I've heard lots of great things. Now, you still will have to deal with those accusations of being maybe quiet, or, you know, you don't seem like you're as open as we would like you to be. But other than that, I've pretty much universally heard great things when people adapt that measure of codification. But I'm glad to hear your sister is applying some of the techniques. Would be great if she's able to chime in and participate at some point. But that is great. Hopefully the lines of communication will improve as she continues to learn and you continue to learn. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, suggestions, questions, you have your own situation you want to discuss, line should be open. Feel free. Other folks who had a hand up, have commentary they wanted to get in? We miss anybody? Seems like a good number. It seems like there might be some folks who hadn't spoken who did have a hand up. That's why I was a little concerned. But at minimum, still seems like a good bit of spectating going on for the workplace racism segment. I hope, if anything, this means that people are not having a whole lot of problems. This, I will highlight, whenever Area 8 comes up and the bevy of activity where everybody has commentary and a question or a comment, this is what I mean about there seems to be something rather unbalanced about the eagerness to participate in those conversations as opposed to workplace racism, where, at least to me, it would seem workplace racism has got to be a much greater problem. Everybody I know is not in some sort of sexual arrangement with a white person. Almost every black person I know is directly, immediately impacted by workplace racism, where they have a job or their parent has a job or spouse, whatever. I mean, that seems like it would be a much more immediate problem, but that does not play out in the zeal with which people approach these conversations. Just an observation. Is that someone going to speak up? Did I miss that? Someone going to share?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you guys doing? It's The Voice. I'm in a place where I can talk now. Yeah, I definitely wanted to let everybody know about the key point that worked for me was pretty much analyzing and understanding your coworkers, especially your black coworkers. To, in my instance, I had, because I really can't talk too much about what's going on with my case, but I am in the process of a lawsuit with my company that I was employed with. And one of the key elements that I went over with my lawyer about this case was the fact that I had a coworker, black coworker, who was a filling guy. So if I went on vacation or any of the employees went on vacation, he would fill in the position of whoever was absent. So there was times that he would go and fill in for different people on their jobs, and he would notice a lot of things that they were doing and getting away with. A lot of, I want to say, non-black, white individuals that were getting away with a lot of stuff that a lot of black individuals on the job were getting penalized for. But by him being a floater, being in that position, he was able to see things that a lot of people wouldn't be able to see. And having that relationship with that person, especially that person of power, he was able to give me information that I wouldn't have been able to have received at all had I not built a good relationship with that individual. And another incident that's helping me out with my case is it's a non-black Hispanic male. He was the supervisor actually had talked to him in a certain way that was out of his, that was way out of norm. And I seen that, and a lot of us seen it. And when we got excused out of the meeting, I actually approached him and I talked to him, and, you know, we got to the level of comfort where he was able to tell me that, you know, he felt some type of way about it, and he felt like the supervisor, he don't, the supervisor doesn't know that his wife is a lawyer. So he was telling me, like, little things that were helpful to me about things he would ask his wife, because things he seen that went on in the job place, he would also ask his wife. So when I end up asking him questions, he would relay information to me that kind of helped me out a lot on what, you know, the road and path that I'm heading to now. So my whole thing is, I always say, you know, you don't have to spark up this narrative or conversation of that's outside the realms of anything else but work, just enough to ask questions, where sometimes a lot of people at work, especially if the workhouse is intense, people want to share things that's on their mind. And sometimes a lot of those things that they share are very, very helpful. And I have received a lot of helpful things just by going around and asking different people in the job certain questions, and you'll be surprised at how much they open up to you, you know. And I just wanted to share that with you, and I'll mute my line.
Outstanding. That is great. If you have figured out some things where you have questions that don't even necessarily pertain to the job, still just constructive information. And I think you had started with just kind of studying the white people that you're around in the workplace. You figured out some questions, as I said, even if they're not related to the job, but this is helping you to study and better understand racist man, racist woman that you're going to have to spend a substantial amount of time with every week. Hey, that is outstanding. Great, great way to function behind enemy lines, to get great at asking questions and studying. That's I liken that to ear hustling. That's one of our jobs, is to get as much recon, to get as much information as you can. Mr. Fuller, I think he says regularly, whites, they are the most familiar mystery. That is, you know, getting information so that we can be less confused about these individuals and how they continue to dominate us. Appreciate that. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, feel free. If you're listening in and you want to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. And just for explanation, the image that's on the Facebook page with this, there was a white male suspected race soldier. He dressed up like Donald Trump and allegedly gave one of his black employees a purse with the Confederate flag on it. This is reported in the last 7 days. And again, this is what I mean about just being codified, where we're not surprised. So these type of incidents happen and you don't, you know, oh my gosh, or get angry and, you know, punch the person or what have you. If anything, maybe just you take a photograph and you think, you know, how you want to proceed. You know, might add this to the collection, but definitely want a picture. See if you can get a picture with the purse and this individual dressed as Donald Trump. And I've said again, a lot of times when, you know, these sort of tacky antics and what have you happen on the job, they want to get a response from you. When they see the black person doesn't respond, it's been my experience that a lot of time they'll calm a lot of that down. It's not as fun when the black person is not going to, quote unquote, chimp out. But regardless, not being surprised, that's the main thing, not being surprised by any of these type antics from a white person, even if it's, you know, the CEO of the company. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. There was a few things I was thinking of. Well, you know, my phone had bad reception for a while, so I just wanted to start out by saying there was a project that we were working on. I guess this lady that was from the, I guess some kind of government agency or whatever wanted copies, and she came to check on this old criminal murder case. And, you know, we were all, I guess, you know, anticipating the visit and preparing for the lady to come see it or whatever. So it ended up going very well. So the lady ended up wanting a lot of email copies. So it saved us a lot on using actual paper and ink or toner or whatever. But the idea that I came up with, I think it helped us get it done most efficiently, because like with the idea that I was trying to implement, like when we were talking about it at first, you know, I don't know if they, you know, my coworkers and supervisor expected me to know something like this. You know, I just basically planned to just say, well, hey, we can just scan so much in at a time as copies, you know, it won't be so much hard work or whatever. And then, you know, set it as a PDF file and, you know, put it into a folder and compress the folder so it can be under 20 megabytes, you know, so you can email that in, you know, certain increments or whatnot. And, you know, the white woman, you know, she was like lost, you know, she looked at me like she didn't know what to do, you know. And the supervisor, she kind of understood what I was saying, but I can tell, you know, I expected to be undermined. So, like, you know, from me saying that verbally, I ended up, taking that action and pretty much made the copies that way. And I got them done the fastest. And basically what I was trying to make my point on that was that I don't think they seen that plan working when I had, you know, brought up, well, this is what we can do, because they were basically saying, well, you can just drag over a bunch of files onto email, but that would have looked a lot more messier, because you would just be sending tons of PDF files to this person's email, where you can just put them in put them in folders, and they can be less bulkier. So I guess they couldn't visualize what I was saying. And I guess they didn't think that I didn't have that kind of computer literacy. So, but until I did it, you know, like the reaction, like, oh my gosh, you know, you got it done so quickly. Like I didn't know anything about this. And when I was expecting that they wouldn't put it in the newsletter, because they were making it seem like this was so important that this person was coming to visit us, but they didn't pretty much recognize, even if they were going to put me and the two other people, it was me, a non-white female, and a white woman. But basically, I did pretty much most of the work. So as you mentioned, you know, no surprise that when black people put their brain power to work, it doesn't get the proper constructive recognition. And the next thing I wanted to share was there's a older black female that has been having problems with her supervisor, and the powerful white people. They have been going out of town on a conference, I guess somewhere here in Florida, maybe in another county. And her supervisor has been acting very tacky and very sneaky, doing sinister things. And she said that the white person went to report to one of the sheriff bailiff officers that they were over there physically fighting, when her supervisor answered her own personal phone that was at her desk. And she did that without the black female's permission. So she went to grab the phone from the white woman, and the white woman was like, don't you ever do that again.
So, you know, they've been pretty much having what the slang term heat or beef, you know, at odds with each other. And supposedly tomorrow, the black female, you know, plans to meet with one of the more powerful white women, I guess, to report this suspected race soldier's behavior patterns. And apparently a lot of the other, because it's mostly female, okay, so most of the other ladies in the office can't seem to get along with this white woman. And, yeah, she says that she was going to, you know, bring in documentation that was also mentioned, I guess, different notes and statutes and laws and whatnot. She's going to have present with her in the meeting. And one last thing I wanted to share was there's this young white woman that works beside me when I'm helping with customer service, and she was basically, I guess you can call it venting, you know, about her brother dating this female that she's been calling quote unquote ghetto. So, you know, I just let white people just talk, you know, explicitly, and they will begin to reveal what they truly feel, I guess. And what I noticed was she was saying, well, hey, you know, we don't say them kind of things, and we don't say words like boo and all of that, and a bunch of indirect terms trying to say that we don't act like, I guess, black people or whatever. So she was saying that, you know, I can't stand being around this chick anymore because her younger brother's in high school. And he's been dating this, I guess, is a white girl, you know, who seems to have a certain amount of cultural influences in regards to how she dresses and how she speaks. And she was saying that, you know, before he started dating, well, I mean, before she started dating my brother, she said she seen this young girl who was, I guess, like around 16. She was at the gas station in the car with four black guys. Okay. So she put the emphasis on the racial classification that they were black. So, you know, I'm just letting her talk or whatever. And she seemed to get very comfortable in how she was talking. And like, what, like, when do you expect to see a white girl, a little white girl with some black people out at, you know, in the middle of the night? And she kind of, you know, she stopped herself. She was saying, not that I'm saying nothing wrong with it. So she started to contradict herself, almost like she forgot she was talking to, you know, the non-white person, a black male. And she kind of, you know, backed away from what she was saying. She was basically pointing out how she disapproved of her brother's selection and, you know, wanting to date this young white person or whatever. So. Yeah, that's all I had to share right now, and thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. That is, guess let me make sure I get that in. And then, man, the first portion of the conversation, not being surprised when you don't get a claim or credit on the job. I think you said that yourself. I've said that before. I think a lot of times many of us get confused about that and thinking if we do a good job that they will think well of us on the job and we will no longer be thought of or treated as niggers. And that just is not the case. Not being surprised, just understanding that. And even I think you said, not thinking that you were going to get a raise or anything for making the suggestion about how they can transfer these files, but thinking I'm going to be undermined. that is about the size of things in the system of racism, white supremacy, unfortunately. And certainly you're not supposed to have any sort of tech savvy, not more so than them. Like, you know, this, please. With the second point, like, wow. Asking some questions can be good. Sounds like you did a pretty good job navigating what can be a very explosive subject matter. I can speak from personal experience. Sounds like you did a pretty good job. Like she didn't, you know, get an attitude or try to kill you. It sounds like even, you know, with some contradiction, I mean, that's par for the course. If there's some contradictions or some things are just not making sense on this particular subject matter. That's to be expected. No surprise there either. But it sounds like you did a solid job asking questions and not causing conflict, following logic. A+. Good job, folks, doing speaking with other folks on the job on these issues. Do we have other folks who had a hand up, either, you know, questions, suggestions on what they've heard from some of the listeners thus far, or your own situation you want to address, other folks that we've not, or other folks, period, that dialed in who have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. This is an emergency. I did want to contribute, so I did actually have to your question about raises. I've had an example where I got a raise. I didn't get the raise that I wanted, but it was still a raise. I do independent contracting as a musician. And a number of years ago, I was working for a church, and I was wanting to get a raise because I didn't like the dollar amount that, well, the dollar amount that I had was okay, but so in order to prepare to get a raise, I ended up Googling a lot of information on what's the process, what do people do. I read a lot of documents. I spoke to my mother. I spoke to my girlfriend at the time. Anyway, I went in. I asked the man who determines whether I get paid or not. I asked him to have a meeting. You know, he asked me what it was in regards to. And, you know, I was just telling him it was about the compensation. He set up a meeting with me. We went in there, and what I was expecting was I gave him a high number. I said I wasn't expecting to get that number. I was expecting to get about 75% of that number, and at least get 50% of that number. But he gave me 25% of the number, but it was still a raise. And so I would just say the method that I saw, you know, looking at a bunch of documents on Google was, of course, you ask for more than what you expect. They're probably not going to give you the number that you asked for. Everybody is in this negotiation type of mind frame. You know, we're going to negotiate. So, you know, I knew that he was in that type of mind frame. So, I mean, he negotiated me way down, but, you know, 25% of the dollar amount I asked for a high dollar amount, 25% of the dollar amount raise I asked for was still, you know, better than nothing. So that's one example. But I'm an independent contractor, so I've never asked for a raise, you know, on any job that I've done with an hourly rate. And this was the one time that I've asked for a raise, but I got it. And then other than that, I just decided, you know, instead of asking for a raise, I would just go to another job with higher pay. Okay, thanks.
Definitely appreciate that. Yeah, the racists, of course, are going to try to generally scrap as hard as they can to keep from giving out anything. I think you said they gave you the 25% raise. You did still get the raise, but it was only 25% of what you were seeking to get. And I think that is pretty standard, them doing everything they can to not compensate us adequately. I was even thinking that the male caller who just dialed in, who was, you know, giving out these suggestions for how they could transfer these documents, like, wow, not, you know, let's look to see if we can compensate and get him, you know, a raise for going above and beyond the call of duty. Like, how does this nigger know this? Do we even know what he's saying? It's like that generally tends to be the way it is. Not, you know, you've done such a great job, we're going to give you a raise to show how much we appreciate your contribution to this great enterprise we have here. Other folks who dialed in have commentary that they want to share. Caller at 6900. You should be with us as well.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to the callers and listeners. This is Jay out of New York.
Greetings.
I finally had an opportunity to be able to call in. I was traveling in. Wanted to follow up. I heard the caller talking about not being recognized. And I think I've spoken about this, and this is dealing with my son. So we do our Strange Things Happening, as I probably mentioned before. It's the final week of school. They get rewarded for the amount of books that they read. So my son and another non-white female, read the highest number of books. So traditionally, the librarian came to my son because he read 61. The other non-white female read 64. And the majority of the other kids, so they're reading between 25 and 30 books. So they kind of doubled over on the numbers. So traditionally, they're supposed to have a pizza party. They're supposed to have their names announced over the loudspeaker. And I think they're supposed to get some ribbons. So my son said, being codified, he said, "Dad, you know, I don't even think that she's going to do anything, but let's see." So he came to me yesterday and said, "You wouldn't believe it, but you probably would. No pizza party, no announcement over the loudspeaker, and I do not have a ribbon, but I am not surprised." A little smile on my face because I feel like I'm doing a little bit of a job being more aware now and preparing him at a very young age not to have any expectation from this level, because as we talk about, school is just like the plantation. But felt really good that there was no defeated feeling on his part. He just felt great that he read that many books. And he also felt great that it was a non-white female also that read, you know, the first amount of books in terms of the most amount of books, you know, for the school year. But just wanted to share that and pushing that same effort to the younger generation so that they can get prepared for what we're talking about right now. That's all I had. Thank you very much.
Wow. Music to my ears. Wow. Reading is more important than watching television. I know Dr. Welsing would have a big smile on her face with that. That is spectacular. Congratulations on your child's massive literary accomplishment. I don't think I read that many books, probably the first all of my elementary years, but that's grand. And even better, having no expectation that the racial white women teachers, I'm sure, involved, having no expectation that they were going to do anything, ribbon, pizza party, announcement, pat on the back, nothing. Having that already, you know, in his head so that he's not disappointed about it. And then it happens. It's just, hey, I am pretty smart. I know exactly what is happening. And I mean, Dr. Welsing used to say that your IQ will go up astoundingly once you start to understand what it means to be white. The system of white supremacy, your IQ points, huge boost. And children, they understand. It's a great replication for how the plantation operates. Same type of thing there. And I think that that's really important at a young age like that, where your sense of worth is not in any way connected to white people praising you or validating you or telling you that you did a good job or that you're smart, like not being connected to that at all. Like, even if they do it, whatever, I still know what you are. And if they don't do it, that's what I expected. And I was not looking for, in search of, in need of that at all. Like, that is phenomenal. That is the healthiest way to be. And that's generally the exact opposite of how they groom, train us to think and function, especially on the job. They really do that to try to keep us searching for and looking for validation, admiration from whites on the job. Tell us we did a good job. Tell us I'm valuable. And very glad to hear that, sir. Doing a great job. Keep that up. Hope that inspires some of our other black parents who are listening. Other folks who are listening in have commentary, suggestions they wanted to share based on what we've heard. Person who dialed in 3299. Did you have commentary? 3299.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, everyone. I've called in once. It's been over a year. And I just wanted to share some things that I've... I'm so appreciative of the things I've learned from this program, and I must say that I am probably a lot older than most of the callers, but again, the program has helped me so much. I work in an office where the head person is an elected official, and just from the things that I've learned from this program, my vision has gotten a lot sharper to recognize the racist things
that happened. I've been at this location for over 17 years. Retirement is very close, say less than a year, that I'll be able to actually get out with my life. Many of the callers have called in and said, and you yourself, Gus, have always said to not get emotional. And I have a very sneaky soldier that is my director. He has a tendency to come to my office abruptly. And I never really noticed it until things that I've heard on this show. He would come to my office very abruptly with the intent to scare me or to... I'm just not sure why he would do it in that manner. And of course, I would react, and I would turn around very quickly and, of course, get very intimidated. But I no longer do that. And I think one of the gentlemen, Thomas, or the other young man that calls, says that, you know, not getting emotional, just stay very calm. And so I started doing that. He would come to my door, and I just wouldn't respond until I caught my breath, and I would just turn around very, very slowly. And it actually worked. He stopped doing what he was doing because he seen that it wasn't working. I also started asking questions when I would notice if I would ask him a question, he would never answer me directly. So when he would do that, I would turn around and ask him a question. And it was as if he was taking note that I was doing it. I also stopped asking questions somewhat directly, and I would do it by email. This soldier would never respond to the email. He would come to my office and explain. And these are just things that I've noticed, how he does what he does. We have a staff of all women in my division. He's a younger man. He's younger than most of the women. When I started the job, it was a job that a lot of people wanted because of the status that went along with it. As soon as it became a job where they were all black females, it no longer had the status that it once had. It became a production job. They just practice so much unjust that it's just remarkable from the very top down to where I work. You can ask a question to get clarity and understanding. Forgive me. There's just so many examples of how they practice what they practice. Let's see. For instance, if there's a certain way to process a certain document, and everyone appears to have a misunderstanding of how it's to be done, everyone does it a certain way, or they just may not have a good understanding at all. And a lot of mistakes are made. So if you go and you ask this gentleman, you tell him what you understand the process to be, he will tell you it's this way and the reason why, you know, very briefly. And so the thing that you would think he would want to do would be to send out a mass email so that everyone is on board and has the same understanding. So we no longer have to revisit this. It'll be done this way, and that's it. He tells the one person, whoever's asking the question, he'll give them the information. He won't send out an email, so everyone else just stays confused. And he does that to everyone. He does it the same way. When you restarted the job, everyone had a training that lasted for about 6 weeks where you learned all of the documents that you're going to be dealing with, how they are processed.
when the staff all became black females, they no longer did a six-week training. They would train for about 2 weeks, and they would only learn maybe 4 documents out of 19. To this day, there are people that have been there more than 5 years, and they're still doing just 4 documents, and we have way over 19 that we process. The agency that I work with deals with the public, the legal community, a great deal. And it seems as if they're purposely holding people at a certain level whenever he is answering a question for me. If I ask him a direct question, this director that I have, I'll ask him a direct question. He will give me sometimes a very direct answer. If my coworker, who is a white woman, if she asked a question, I can hear him giving her the top, the bottom, the what ifs, an example, clearly an example of how to apply the information to the document. But that's never the experience that I have. And I just wanted to share that. I have so many stories, again, and I am almost retired. And I am so glad for this program because it has really helped me over the years to be able to sustain, basically. And I had so much stress on this job prior to your show that I had a stroke, and I didn't even know that I had a stroke until I went to the emergency room and they told me that that's what the CAT scan had relayed. Last week, one of the callers said that they had some family problems or issues and they needed to take the time off, and they didn't. And now that they're in the process of doing that, I took his advice just from listening, and I have applied for just a week off, and I've got my doctor to write me a note so that this can take place. I have enough vacation and sick time to do that, but I just wanted to share, take care of your health because it's the most important thing. And thank you so much for the show and all of the callers.
Thank you so much for dialing in, ma'am. That was great. I hope the broadcast has been of some constructive value. I'm so glad to hear that you got your request in to get a week off. I hope you get it, maybe even mm-hmm. 2 weeks. The self-care is definitely important, and that's something, you know, Gus, I fail at this all the time. But that is super important to take that time to recharge and just do whatever you can to help rebuild, because all of us, we experience so much damage from just being around racists, much less having to deal with them and all the abuse that they heap on us on a daily basis on the job and elsewhere. So I'm so glad, even a bit envious that you are hooking up, and hopefully you'll get your vacation and it'll be grand, be a great way to recharge your battery. But that's what I've said consistently, that I hope as we get a better understanding of what racism, white supremacy is and how it works, we can minimize some of the stress that we had, because I think some of that stress comes from being confused. I don't know about you all, but when you're confused, that is stressful. Like when you have a problem and you are not sure how to address it. Wow. At least, you know, if you know what needs to be done, maybe you're not able to do it right now, but this is the problem. I know what needs to be done. I'm just stuck at this particular step. That's stressful too, but I think that's easier to deal with than just I'm stuck and I have no idea how to resolve this issue. And that's the position that racists like to keep us in. I think it's much healthier. It's much easier to deal with when you have an understanding about who you're dealing with, why you're having these problems. And then it just becomes, you know, what's the best way to navigate in this situation. So Yeah, hopefully all of us, we can minimize at least a little bit of the stress that we deal with as we get better informed with some of the decisions that we make on the job. And same thing, just being vigilant, understanding the people that we're around. And you'll notice, once you have that, you'll notice the way that they respond when a white person asks for help or detail, the way that they respond when you, a black person, ask for help and details. Mm-hmm. Substantial difference in the amount of information that's given and how we get to a resolution. You'll notice those type of things. And I think that makes it, at least in my opinion, I think that's healthier when you understand, when you have an accurate understanding, an accurate and in-depth understanding of the environment that you're in, the people that you're working with, and why things are happening. Much, much better way to proceed in the workplace and anywhere else. Other folks, again, thank you for chiming in and giving us some of the background detail. You said you had many of stories. Other folks have commentary or suggestions that they wanted to offer as well?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I agree with you, Gus. That the young lady that just commented, I really want to thank her. I know she mentioned that she worked, I believe she said, for an elected official. And that's just one of the other things that I noted when I first started calling in, probably like she did, is that you got all these different people, you know, in banking, they work in quote-unquote politics, customer service, cooks, teachers. Everybody has the same problem, white people. And I really appreciate what you just said about confusion. And if you have expectations that these people are going to practice racism and this is what they do, it really makes your job a whole lot easier because you're not expecting for some good white person to come in. And I know that helped me. Firefighter actually helped me with that, which was me being more serious. But literally, it really helped make my job a lot easier because you're not expecting some good white person to come in there. And then you're also not looking at them saying, well, they were a good white person. Maybe they're not racist. No, you're all just racist. And my expectations are the same. So I also want to applaud the young lady. Fantastic show of black self-respect. My mom was a teacher in New York City for 37 years, and when she got the opportunity to take time off, she took it and ran. So that's a great suggestion, and I hope she gets that time off as well. Thanks.
Cheers for time off. Cheers for time off. I think the great Sabrina Johnson might be listening in, a comrade of Dr. Wells, and she actually came to Gus T. Renegade's neck of the woods this week, the wonderful Pacific Northwest, and right on cue, even though we're seconds away from it being officially summertime, it rained, it's been cloudy the entire week, even though it's June when the weather is normally pretty nice in Seattle, but not this week for her visit. Hopefully when she makes it back out here, if she comes in the summer, do it. Got to make it quick. She'd have to do it in the next 2 months. Hopefully it'll be nice weather, but hopefully she's listening and had a grand time out in these parts. Other folks have commentary. No speakerphone. It feels like I'm hearing a little bit of echo. Other folks have commentary they wanted to share. The female caller that just dialed in, did you have something you wanted to follow up with? Or were you satisfied?
No, sir. I just need to mute my line.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Feel free if you had more you wanted to share. Other folks who had commentary?
Hi, girl.
Stacy in London joining us live. Yes, ma'am.
I did want to commend the last caller, actually, just on the way in which I guess she learned how to manage her emotions in a different way and actually use just her approach to deal with the racist attacks. And it did actually remind me of something my head of team would do to me. She had this way of coming and asking me questions about things that I did, but it was done as a way of bullying and intimidating me. So, for example, if she'd asked me to speak to a certain person, and I might well have done it, she'd come up to my desk and say, oh, can you forward the email that you sent to such and such? And the way she was doing it was to let me know she was just gathering evidence against me, because there was actually no reason for her to request that copy of that email. And she'd also sort of come up to my desk, and as she's asking me the question, sort of looking in my face to see if her antics were causing as much damage as she was hoping it would. So therefore just watching my reactions to this little racist attacks. And one day someone had called in for me and left a message. Now, what my head of team had not realized is that it was one of the group directors who had spoken to this individual and referred her to me. And I had followed up with an email suggesting that we have a conversation. Now, I hadn't been able to get hold of her, and she must have dialed and left a message for me one day when I wasn't in the office. And the organization that I work for, I mean, we do a range of things, but it often involves giving organizations funding to deliver projects on our behalf. And so anything that involves money or organizations wanting money, they will, they will react in certain ways. And anybody with any level of experience in my organization knows that, organizations react in certain ways when they're, particularly if they are, wanting funding for their projects. So this woman had apparently then called my head of team the following day and left a message to say she was trying to get hold of me and she couldn't, and blah, 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 blah. So I've no doubt that call and that message was left. However, my head of team should have known better than to respond in the way that she did. So she then sent an angry email and copied in my line manager. And apparently this person had left 10 messages for me and couldn't get hold of me and asking me to set out what I'd done. And I thought, what the hell is this nonsense? Because I knew that that person was responding to a message that I had left for her. So there was no reason for her to have called my head of team, but I know she did. However, there's no way that she could have left or told my head of team that she'd left 10 messages. So I thought, I'm not going to, take this. So I emailed my boss and I copied my manager and I said, it's a bit confusing as to why this person would be leaving that message given... And I explained exactly what the scenario was. And I emailed her and I said, it would be very helpful if you could set out in writing exactly what that message was. Needless to say, she was obviously lying and wasn't going to put in writing anything more because she was lying. So she came up to my desk and said, sorry, and I missed that bit in between. She'd asked me to set out what my group director had asked because she thought she was going to use that as evidence against me. And when I asked her to also set out exactly what was said in that message in writing, all of a sudden she had backtracked and come to my desk and said, don't worry about it. It was just because she left a message and, don't worry about it. So, changing that approach and using her own method of intimidating to actually, to let her know, listen, I'm not actually going to take your bullying, and the method that you use to trap me also can work in reverse for you. So you said that exactly what happened in writing, and needless to say, she backtracked. I also just wanted to commend the person who called in about his son's experience at school. And, using the strange things happen at school and, explaining to your children in advance sometimes how to deal with certain situations, because then it does mean that as well as them not internalizing, what it does do is also help you manage that relationship. And my daughter had a similar situation at school where she was apparently on a gifted and talented program, and I believe they have a similar program or used to do a similar program in school where basically the young people who are doing really well academically, they will allegedly get them involved in lots of different activities to continue to raise their aspirations and encourage them to continue learning. Now, I hadn't actually been notified that my daughter was on this program. I mean, I knew she was doing well academically, but that this program was even operating in the school and that they were supporting her. I didn't know. I wasn't told until she came home one day and she had told me that she'd been invited to get involved in a television program being filmed by Channel 4 in the UK. And so this is one of the national television channels. And she'd been invited to participate in a particular program to look at the conflict between African Caribbean young people and also young people of Kurdish background living in a particular area. And they wanted her to appear on this debate, in the debate with other young people talking about this conflict. I thought, what the hell? So I asked her, is there conflict between the African Caribbean young people and Kurdish young people? She said, Mom, I don't know. I said, are you an expert on this conflict? And she said, no. So I said, well, you won't be going. And I explained the reason why. Because what will happen is she will be forever memorialized on TV, on national, on the national program, as a some kind of delinquent involved in conflict, and just basically being used without even realizing. And those things will have an impact on the future. I then wrote to the school and told the school she won't be getting involved in this. However, really pleased that she's on the program. She's very good at maths and very interested in maths. Is there anything that you can provide for her to boost, you know, obviously her knowledge in maths? And I sent that letter to her head of year, and didn't get a response back. And every time I was in the school and I made the contact, eye contact with this head of team, she would avoid my eye. Well, she would avoid eye contact and look at the floor. And that told me everything I needed to know about her, the gifted and talented program, and the agenda for trying to get my daughter involved in a debate about conflict that she knew nothing about. Gus, I do have one more thing to comment on if there's time, but I'll mute my line there.
Stacy in London, sharing live 3:22 a.m. Friday morning, London time. She's hanging in to discuss workplace racism. Wow, that is on many levels the tackiness, and she's, you know, given us quite a few updates for a while to deal with. But world system of racism, white supremacy, and again, why I emphasize, I think it's so important, just when we're able to not look at this as one individual act where racism, white supremacy was a problem, but this is consistent, and you see the same types of patterns happening worldwide in terms of things that white people do, ways that they undermine us in work settings, not hiring us at all. Same things playing out worldwide, us not getting adequate compensation, not just specific to one region on the planet. Other folks who dialed in who have a hand up who we have not heard from at all. I think the caller last four digits, 8027, 8027. Did you have a commentary you wanted to share?
Yes, sir. I know you had mentioned to an earlier caller, or she had mentioned that you should not be emotional, I guess, in interactions with whites. I haven't quite mastered that skill yet. What gets me, though, is the pettiness of dealing with 100% of whites on in any space. I'm a bigger male, so I don't really get the confrontational that a smaller man may get or a female may get. So, for instance, I'm college age now, but when I was in high school, I worked at Subway, and I was being trained by this this white guy, and it was me and another non-white female. And as I was walking in front of him, he made like a sound, and I turned around as he did it, and he was pretending as if he was cracking a whip across our backs. And so I confronted him about it, and you know, I see, you know, what makes you think that you have authority, and why are you cracking a whip at me? Racializing this is completely inappropriate. You know, I said I can have it reported. You know, and the entire time he split away and worked prep for the rest of the day. I reported to the manager, and all she did was switch out shifts and give me a different trainer. He still worked there. So it's the entire, I guess, the pettiness that I'm having a really hard time dealing with, and that's just, that could be dealing with a cashier at Walmart. So if there's any tips that anybody could, you know, suggest with, you know, understanding how to deal with petty and tacky tactics of whites, it would really help, and I'll mute my phone now.
Very interesting. I know that's one that many victims have have said that they have a difficult time. Just the insults, kind of the tackiness of it all, that they really struggle with, and can sometimes lose their cool. Maybe be provoked might be a good way of thinking about it. Folks have any, I guess, suggestions for ways that, you know, we can practice not being provoked, so that, you know, these type of slights, the cracking, the whip sound and what have you, these type of things don't, you know, get us upset to where we're behaving in a manner that's not going to be in our best interest?
Yes, sir. Lower your expectations of white people. I mean, bring it down real low, because there is no level that they would not stoop to get a reaction or to harm you. And I think if you carry that attitude, it would at least help you to eliminate you from being in a reactionary mode. I'm not saying it's 100%, but it will probably help you. In other words, just practice it. Practice it. It's like personal mental training based on experiences, and also from you maybe yourself imposing counter-racist scientific experiments yourself to figure out that what we're in a world of, we're in a global world of white supremacy that's dominated by the system of white supremacy. So it's going to be a whole lot of white people doing a whole lot of incorrect things on a daily basis. And I mentioned before on this program is that the workplace in itself is a grandstand for mistreatment, because that's definitely one of the places where white people are going to be in direct contact with their victims. And the victims, for the most part, is at their mercy, because they have to come to work for them, so to speak. And if you lower your expectations for them, that would help you out. I would say it helped me. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Other suggestions on how we can not get upset, become uncodified with some of the tacky slights and insults that racists dole out worldwide on the job?
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in London, 3:30 a.m. Friday morning.
I was just going to say, I agree with the retired firefighter about lowering expectations. A couple of other things, I mean, and they are the things that I've been said on this program or previous programs, in terms of you saying in your head that mantra, expect racism. White people will be white people. You know, when and I've found that that works for me. So you're not reacting, and also practicing non-reaction or not answering, I think, is one of the things you've said on previous programs. You know, not actually responding. Just I said it, you heard it, don't respond. But one of the Richard Williams, Serena and Venus Williams' father, I remember on this broadcast and also in reading the book where he talked about how, as part of the training for Serena and Venus, he would get people in their local area to shout at them and be hostile while they were practicing for, just learning tennis and also practicing for matches. And it would be anything from, you know, just comments on their the way that they're playing tennis through to racial comments. And that way they didn't actually get affected when it was happening to them on court. And I think, you know, just reading about that and hearing, and it the penny just dropped that, you know, we almost have to prepare ourselves mentally for these situations because they are going to happen. And I mean, obviously he is genius in understanding and recognizing that those situations will take place, and so preparing them for that. And that happens a lot in sport in terms of the exercises for mental toughness. And you know, you can sort of Google those things on YouTube. So hopefully that's useful. But I think it is literally about expecting it and not being surprised, and just practice ignoring it. You know, and that doesn't mean to say you're not going to get mad about it, and perhaps talking about the outside of work just to release tension, but expect it because it's always going to be there. I'll meet my line, Gus.
Stacy in the UK, great suggestions. Great memory, too. I had forgotten about that portion from Richard Williams' autobiography. We're doing Gil Scott Heron's autobiography session number 2 tomorrow. I do have a soft spot for autobiographies. We did do, and I read both of those. I read Richard Williams, and I'm reading Gil Scott Heron's. But that portion in the book where he talks about hiring black people in California to yell insults at Serena and Venus so that they would not be surprised when that sort of thing happened to them out on the court. And hey, that training has come in handy throughout their illustrious historic careers repeatedly, I would say. But that is a great point. And to the caller who dialed in his question, I would say I try to follow logic. Mr. Fuller encourages that. Dr. Welsing encouraged that. I think might get a little cosign from Sabrina Johnson as well, but I am an advocate of following logic. Let's say we get emotional. The guy, you know, does the whip thing on the job, or calls you a nigger or a spear chuck or whatever it is. Says racist jokes all day long about you and your whole family. Okay, let's get emotional. I jump up, whatever that means. So that means I jump up and down. I call him a cracker. I call him names. I throw something at him. I punch him in the face. Whatever that, you know, getting as emotional as you get and wherever emotion leads. I like to win. If we're going to play a game, if we're going to do something, I want to be successful. Put that in quotes. I have not seen examples where getting emotional, whatever that means, yelling back, cursing at them, becoming violent. I have not seen where that works out well for the black person, where they become emotional as a result of racism being practiced against them, and they end up getting a raise or a promotion or, you know, an $8 billion cash settlement. I've never seen that. It's been my experience that it ends up something bad, like that person, the black person, after they get emotional, they end up being the one that get fired, arrested, sometimes both, all kinds of bad things. That's just the perspective that I take. If I am emotional, what is likely to happen? And I've seen too many instances where I can pretty confidently predict that if you continue to respond emotionally to racism, white supremacy, white people, racist man, racist woman, they can easily handle an emotional black person. The evidence is clear, unequivocal on that. What I have seen, what I have concluded, they have a much more difficult time dealing with a black person that's codified, that is not going to be emotional. You say something, I'm not going to, quote unquote, fly off the handle and get angry. I'm going to think. I'm going to pause, reflect, and think about what can I do? What should I do to get the best possible outcome in a system of racism, white supremacy? I've seen where that gives them a lot more trouble. If I can just say nigger and you're going to get angry and punch me in the face or curse, and great, we will be stomping on you and your grandchildren and your great grandchildren. Like, we'll just continue doing what we've been doing for the last, you know, who knows how many ever centuries. Stopping to think and codify your response. This whole apparatus of white supremacy could be done in very short order. I could be in error. Did other folks have suggestions for, you know, how to go about staying calm, codified, not responding to the insults and slights, tackiness?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I agree with everything that everyone said. I would say reading. The book club has helped me tremendously in terms of continuing to codify myself. I think the more that I read, the more that I start to learn about context of words, the type of books that we're reading in the book club, and then the other books that I'm also picking up, and just looking at history, just like you said, Gus, once you start to understand the triggers that traditionally have set non-white people off throughout generations, and you realize that it's a mental game as opposed to this emotional game. And I always say, just like Dr. Welzing used to say, reading is more important, staying away from social media, movies, because all of those devices are kind of set to kind of trigger the emotion. So I think the more you pull away from those mediums and zero in on contextual reading, I think that will help tremendously. So just my thoughts.
Caller at 7894, did you have or want to make sure any more suggestions for the caller about not getting emotional?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gee. Oh, okay. Hi, this is Soulscry. I spoke with you last October about a workplace situation that I have, but I didn't have a follow-up question to the latest.
Oh, okay. What was your situation in October?
I had an issue where I had a non-white black woman who had attacked me because I reported her for making some disrespectful remarks. And I followed your suggestion. I ignored her. I did not follow through with writing a report. I basically told my administrator that the problem was resolved due to her being promoted and transferred when I returned back to work. I don't know if you recall the story where when she attacked me, I took off for 3 weeks. During that time, I was able to seek some mental health help to help with my nerves because my anxiety was pretty peak. And when I returned back to work, she had transferred due to a promotion. But during that time, I was also able to promote. So the situation was resolved because I didn't pursue writing a report regarding the action. So I just wanted to thank you and the listeners for giving me some really good advice to help me keep stay employed. And I will mute my line.
Awesome. I'm glad I say that. I try to say that on a regular basis. I so appreciate it when people give us the follow-up, not, you know, out of any, we are putting it down on workplace racism advice, but just it's helpful to know, you know, like I said before, follow logic. It's helpful to know, oh, okay, this works. This doesn't work.
Yeah.
This works in terms of, that's all. And I'm just saying that it seems to me that there is a tremendous absence of that time in terms of just following logic in a counter-racist context on the job in terms of problems that are plaguing Black people every day worldwide. Like, that's needed. So that's great. I'm glad, you know, we had something constructive, and I'm sure they will, you know, they will have more coming. So be prepared and stay alert, because they'll have some more shenanigans for you to deal with shortly. So stay stay alert.
Well, I had more shenanigans.
Oh, okay.
Like the previous callers before and yourself, I was able to follow your advice and staying codified and really understanding that we as Black people, we got some real serious issues. And the best way for us to deal with each other is to have a whole bunch of understanding and try to just look for ways to solve the problem, not to try to make the problem worse than what it is. Like I stated before, I just want to thank you and the callers for the advice, and I wish everybody the best with their encounters.
Right on. Grand, grand. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to get in. We have about 20 minutes left in the broadcast. Please don't wait till the last minute. Other folks have commentary.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is Curtis. I wanted to comment on the caller who wanted advice on staying calm when white people get tacky and do things to get a reaction out of them. I think some good advice would be to listen to archives of Neil Lee Fuller Jr., but especially I think Mr. Fox put a playlist of Kyle's featuring Neil Lee Fuller Jr., and, you know, I think all those broadcasts are pretty golden, and, you know, to learn how to prevent reacting in a way that they want you to act. You know, without, you know, intellect or whatnot. Because I give you an example. Like, I work in a retail sales floor, and it's about, like, 50 yards long. So last week, there was a white woman and her mother, and I walk around the sales floor, you know, looking for customers or whatever, and it's a huge floor. It's not narrow or anything. So she walks up behind me and says, "Excuse me." So I turn around and just look at her, and, you know, I just, like, what's going on? I move out of her way, and she walks past me and says, "Yeah, you're just kind of lugging around." So I didn't say nothing. I just looked at her. So, I mean, just things like that. You know, she has all this space, and she followed right up on my back. And, you know, she said that, then she made a remark to get a reaction out of me. I just looked at her, didn't say nothing. There's nothing to gain from that. So that would be my advice, you know, listen to Neil Lee Fuller Jr. Broadcast, especially with the cows. You'll get some golden advice.
And again, I'm not saying that you have to. Oh, thank you so much for sharing, sir. I'm not saying that you have to take those type of slights and not do anything. I'm just saying the type of response. You know, if you want a different way that you can handle that, if you just don't want to take the non-response. Big advocate of asking questions. Ma'am, are you white? You could just ask that and see what I've seen where that can change a whole situation once you call that out. Or, you know, that seems like something a racist would do if you just want to make a statement. That seems like something a racist would say. You can make a statement. I mean, it's a lot of ways that you can handle it. But again, it would not be, I would think, what am I trying to accomplish here? What's going to be in my best interest? And again, I think as the previous caller mentioned, I think Mr. Fuller talks about that a lot, following logic and how we assess each situation. The caller at 6353, did you have commentary?
Yes, good afternoon. I was calling regarding the gentleman working at Walmart,
And there were some good suggestions. Lower your expectations of the system of racism, white supremacy, terrorism. Raise your own personal standards day after day. Keep working at your own standards, raising them. And this is your own personal indebtedness to yourself to do that. But in conjunction with lowering your expectations of the system, raise your own standards. You must practice remaining calm. That's to continue to learn. But you have to practice it. And my personal recommendation is just one thing, and that is to go silent. I can hardly overstate the value of a cold, stone, steely silence. It's so quiet you can drop a carpet. And just that. But you must possess the gravitas to do it. You can even, I've even smiled at that kind of response or statement that was made in terms of, or some act like cracking a whip. I may look at the person and smile, but the seriousness in my eyes and in my presence is stone, steely, cold silence. Okay? Hope that helps.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Do we have other folks that we've not heard from at all who have a hand up? Anybody that we missed completely?
Hi, this is Ken Steele. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Awesome. I am reporting from, where am I? I'm in Pomona, California, and I just wanted to say in response to the caller asking about emotionality or controlling your emotions, you know, this is a question that I get asked a lot, and I think a lot of victims have a lot of trouble dealing with managing our emotions a lot of, and I think a lot of us get tripped up when we encounter passive aggressive behavior from suspected racists, especially if we are late in realizing that they are behaving in an insulting manner or in a derogatory manner towards us. I think a few things that I've been able to do to reduce the amount of emotions that I have when dealing with these people is like one caller suggested earlier, lowering your expectations for dealing with racists. I think that's a really good suggestion that was given. But another thing that I do is that sometimes I will go ahead and expose myself to some of the, I guess, discussions and some of the, mindset of these racists, you know, I just kind of practice listening there. Like, there's some talk radio programs where you can just practice listening to racists just go on, and you can't react there. And if you can control your emotions when listening to that sort of rhetoric, the sort of rhetoric that you hear when you're actually, you're actually in the plantation. The effect is, I find, is tremendously reduced. I just don't get so emotional. Also, taking an attitude that you are not in a position to help them be racist, or that shouldn't be your objective. Just knowing that, hey, I'm anytime that I'm explaining my feelings or speechifying or, you know, making all sorts of grand statements about how I feel, I'm actually helping them out. If you take that attitude, then that's another way that you can reduce the amount of emotions that you feel towards them. Because oftentimes we think that expressing our emotions and expressing our feelings in a particular situation is going to help them help us. But in reality, all you're doing is letting them know exactly what to do to get under your skin and to continue to harm you. So if you can do those things, that would tremendously reduce the amount of emotional, I guess, the kind of knee-jerk response that you have towards racism. Also, having a goal in mind when you are at these jobs is oftentimes another remedy that you can have to the emotionality. If your goal at these jobs is to catch racists slipping and to find them in a situation where they are incriminating themselves in some aspects or just violating the law and others, you know, just having a mind to pay attention to everything they say and keep detailed notes. You know, when your mind is on, I got to hear exactly what they're saying, I need to take the most, you know, accurate notes. That's another way to just avoid having all of those nagging emotional feelings that may rise up when you are interacting with them. If your goal is to record them and to monitor exactly what it is that they're saying and to create constructive reports, then you're going to be less prone to giving into emotionality in your and your emotional responses. And I guess that's my advice regarding keeping your cool or not being so emotional around these races, especially on the job. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. I know, Stacy, in the UK, where it's almost 4 a.m. Friday morning, I know she said she had one more thing she wanted to get in. Did we have another comment before we wrap up? We have about 8 minutes left. Do we have anybody else other than Stacy? We got everybody? Everybody else satisfied? I'll assume the rest of the folks are grand. Stacy, if you are with us, if you had anything else you wanted to get in before we get ready to wrap up, proceed.
Yeah, because it's a question, actually, and perhaps it can be picked up on next week's program. But and I'll give an example of why I'm asking the question. But it came to me off the back of you reading The Delectable Negro. And I was just wondering about how many ways we are devoured, and I use that word, in the workplace, and just interested in how people, well, examples of that, and how people have responded to that. And I'll give an example, and there are many, to be honest with you, but one particularly tacky experience was from a racist white female, and she had joined the organisation, and you know, I've often found from white women that they are very fascinated with the black female body and what we wear, and whether or not you spend a lot of money on your clothes or not, we just become fascination. And this individual had asked me one day about a pair of trousers that I was wearing. And, you know, and that happens. And, you know, in the past, I just used to answer the question and not think much of it. But I realized that actually sometimes it's because people are paying way too much attention, and it's not coming from a genuinely good place. And so she asked me, and you know, oh, where did you get them from? And I said, I don't know, I can't remember. And then just moved on to whatever I was doing. And she then turned around and said to me, oh, well, when you go to the toilet, can you read the label in the in your trousers? That way you can remember where you bought them from. And I had never heard anything like it in my life. I was so stunned. I said, oh, okay. And I thought, well, I have absolutely no intention of doing this. But later on that day, in the afternoon, she was obviously observing me, and I went to the toilet. And I came back, and she said, did you have a look at the label? And I said, no. And that really did happen. But that's just one example of the way in which, we are devoured, and the Delectable Negro just helped me kind of understand some of those behaviours. And I'm just interested in both male and female experiences of those kinds of scenarios. But I think that's one for next week's program, Gus. I'll mute my line.
Wow. I just mentioned the great Sabrina Johnson. She is visiting Seattle as we speak, I think. We hung out for a little bit and chatted about racism, white supremacy, Dr. Welsing. I don't even normally meet the few stragglers who make it to this part of the globe because I'm such a misanthrope. But I made an exception for one of Dr. Welsing's close colleagues. But I mentioned Delectable Negro, the importance of that book, which I did not read, but we just covered on the cows earlier this year, and the importance. I suspect a myriad of different ways. In fact, I remember a black female, she called in with a workplace experience. This was back when we didn't even have an individual program for workplace racism, but she called in and she said that she, and this is a great illustration of why I say don't keep anything on your desk except material, desk workstation, except material that you need to do your job. Nothing. No photos, candy dish, nothing. But she said she kept a candy dish at her desk and some suspected racist came up and said, oh, is this community chocolate? And she said, oh, yeah, you know, help yourself, get a piece. And he said, oh, no, I wasn't talking about the candy. And she just kind of looked at him like, you know, what? And I said, see, that's why no candy dish. That eliminates even the pretense for you to have a reason to come to my area to begin with, because I say that just gives an excuse, a reason for racists to come into your area and practice racism. We're not going to have anything on the desk, but I think that would qualify right there. A total act of white supremacy and devouring the black body sexually as well explicitly. Anybody want to respond to that in the last few minutes before we conclude? An example of being devoured in the workplace?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Rev from Ohio again. I know that I've shared this in the past, but before I was going by the nickname Red, but the experience that I had with the race soldier, white woman, she would always have this like infatuation with like my weight or touching my chest. And recently when I had to go inside the office, she was speaking to another non-white person that I would speak to from time to time. And they had both said something to me, but I just acted as if I was too busy because I just didn't want to get her in that same comfortable zone again to be able to feel like she needed to touch me. So, I mean, that was definitely just thinking about just, and this went on for a long time. I would even say like, I don't know, weeks, a couple months. So, and just having that fear of, you know, going back to sharing too much, and just really being afraid of what the repercussions would be. So that's my story. Thank you for allowing me to share.
I know we've had a lot of those types of situations. Thank you for sharing, Red. We've had a lot of those types of situations over the years with the unwanted touching and even the sneaking up from behind the person and doing it. We've had lots and lots of instances, whether it was a racist man, racist woman, both equally engaged in this behavior. Anybody else have a quick response they wanted to get in? They can get in 60 seconds before we wrap, or we satisfied until next week.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Quick thing. Are they practicing racism or just existing within their rites of passage? Like, I just want to say that, is it by osmosis or is it psychological?
I'm not really sure what that means, and it seems we might need more than a few seconds to unpack some of your question. We'll have to, and that might even not, sounds like it might even be beyond workplace racism. That sounds like that might be a compensatory call-in thing that we could address Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, compensatory call-in, dial-in. We'll review what's gone down the last 7 days. We certainly will be talking about the fire in London, England. We also will review, I think, the Bill Cosby trial. The jury was deadlocked. Might be a verdict tomorrow, might not. We'll have to see, amongst the other news and tidbits that happened over the last 7 days. Also want to make sure, Sunday, Global Sunday Talk on Racism. We will have quite a few of our guests. Stacey might be back with us from different parts of the world. We definitely will be talking about the fire as well as the election this coming Sunday. As I said, Esther Stanford-Cosse will be back with us live from the UK this coming Monday. She's been with us repeatedly. I recently played the segment where she was on the BBC, where they did a whole segment, like 20 minutes, on the question, can white people be victims of racism? And she eloquently answered the question in the negative. Absolutely not. Did a great job with counter-racist logic. She'll be with us Monday live from the UK. Early program. She'll be with us. It'll be 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. The program Sunday also will be same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. Obviously, they are way earlier than our normal broadcast time because the guests are joining us from different parts of the world. So if you can tune in live, great. Looking forward to both of those broadcasts. And Dr. Tommy Kerr should be returning before the end of the month to discuss the new book, The Man Not. Always a treat to have him on the broadcast. Thanks for folks tuning in. Hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. And again, shout out to Sabrina Johnson. We'll be here tomorrow. Not Coretta Scott King. All done. Gil Scott Heron. Gil Scott Heron. The Scots are throwing me off a little bit. Gil Scott Heron. Audio segment number two, we'll be picking up tomorrow in his autobiography, The Last Holiday. Great read so far. Looking forward to that. Same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have a question, comment, gripe, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. I will state again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. See no evidence that us being intoxicated, alcohol, cannabis, tobacco, any other narcotics. I've seen no evidence that that has helped us to solve the problem of white supremacy, racism. Think Dr. Welsing. She would certainly encourage sobriety to help us keep our brain computer functioning at optimal capacity to solve this problem immediately. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest black self-respect each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you're so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. A victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.